The lone wolf, Donald Trump. Is he turning into a lame duck president? Well, we get in and among his MAGA base.
I'm just glad to be alive to be able to pay whatever it is, because if the Iranians bring nuclear holocaust to the world, none of us are going to be buying gasoline.
So what do MAGA voters make of it? Back home, we move to a situation where 1 in 10 people working are on some form of disability benefits. Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden earlier this week.
The best form of welfare reform is opportunity and work. Not just a welfare state, but a working state.
Oh, the irony. Staff at the Doctors Union, the BMA, are now going on strike over poor pay. Yes, that's the staff within the BMA. 7 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, health officials in England say an outbreak of meningitis in Kent is the fastest growing they've ever seen. 15 cases have been confirmed since Saturday, including 2 deaths. A targeted vaccine programme is rolling out for students living in halls at the University of Kent. Vaccines expert Professor Richard Moxon's told LBC the risk outside of the local area remains low.
In general, these outbreaks are regionally limited. It would be an extremely exceptional situation if it became further afield in regions of England that are miles away from where it's happening at the moment.
The US military says it's used powerful bombs to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Officials say the targets housed weapons that posed a risk to international shipping. The waterway has effectively been closed since the start of the Iran war, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. The Scottish Government says it's committed to ensuring access to end-of-life care after Holyrood rejected a bill to legalise assisted dying. The proposal would have allowed mentally competent adults with less than 6 months to live to seek help to end their lives. A charity is warning of a growing divide between families who qualify for funded childcare and those who don't. While eligible working parents get up to 30 hours a week, others are still paying hundreds of pounds a month. Currum says that risks leaving disadvantaged children without access to early education. Lydia Hodges is from the charity.
We need to move to a fairer system, you know, one that gives every child an equal right to a place, not just those with working parents, in the same way that a child is guaranteed a school place. That much simpler system would ensure that no child or parent loses out.
The Education Secretary has told LBC she recognises that childcare is not a luxury, but the foundation giving every child the best start. You can read more of Bridget Phillipson's exclusive comment on the LBC app. And Scotland's busiest railway station has partially reopened this morning. Glasgow Central has been closed for 10 days after a large fire destroyed an adjoining building. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,403. It closed up 85 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after 7 on Wednesday, the 18th of March. As the number of cases increases of meningitis up to 15, some patients being kept in an induced coma. Questions are being asked, is the government doing enough? And supplies, apparently, of the necessary drugs and vaccines are dwindling. We'll give you full coverage of that. Meanwhile, the other big story is, of course, the global story of the President of the United States increasingly isolated, losing a key member of his administration yesterday and going back to repeating the comparisons between the late great Sir Winston Churchill and the current Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer.
You see that man right there? You know who that is?
Churchill.
Winston Churchill. The late great Winston Churchill. And, you know, unfortunately, Keir is not Winston Churchill.
But as it appears that globally he's not got a lot of support with the United Kingdom, France, Japan, Australia, Italy, Germany turning its backs, what of his voting base? We've been in and about in Oklahoma, one of the key strong states for the Republicans and indeed for Donald Trump. And as gas is going above $4 a gallon, sorry, petrol is going above $4 a gallon, has he still got his MAGA base?
The war is ridiculous too, but this is all Trump's fault. All this is Trump's fault. The gas, the food prices, everything is Trump's fault.
Yeah, it's a pretty mixed picture there in the MAGA base, and we'll play you more of that a little later in the show. Plus, back here in the UK, how 1 in 10 working-age Britons are on some form of disability benefits, with 1,000 successful claims a day. How is that ever going to be stopped? And, oh, the irony. Staff at the BMA, the doctors' union, staff are now going on strike for 2 days over poor pay.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, health chiefs are saying this meningitis crisis is a once-in-a-generation outbreak. They're rushing to get antibiotics and drugs to students. There are reports of cases now in London and in France. A baby has reportedly fallen ill, and 15 people we know of have either had it, sadly, so two of those have died, of course, two of whom have died, and are being kept in an induced coma. Emma Corr, LBC's correspondent in Canterbury, you may recall in her report yesterday, she said it was like COVID-like days. That line seems to have been picked up by most of the newspapers in their coverage this morning, and Emma Corr joins us again from Canterbury. Emma, morning again.
Morning, Nick. Well, the government really trying to get a grip on this outbreak, with cases now at 15 requiring hospital treatment. 5 schools in Kent have confirmed or suspected cases. Those 15 cases do include 2 deaths, a sixth former and a university student. And the majority of these cases, Nick, are linked to what's being described as a super spreader event on the first full weekend of March at a nightclub, Club Chemistry in Canterbury. 2,000 people went there that weekend, with concerns this rare meningitis B strain has spread through the sharing of vapes and drinks. These students have been picking up antibiotics they're now being offered here in Canterbury.
I was at the club the same night as one of the dates, they said. Thought I'd better come down and just eliminate the risk, really.
I'm worried that stuff is going to shut down, and it's sort of a bit of PTSD with the whole COVID thing. I'm not super worried, I want to take a precaution.
The chief executive of the UK Health Security Agency has described this outbreak as explosive and unprecedented. Yesterday, we learned a baby from Folkestone is critically ill in hospital in London after contracting the same strain linked to the Canterbury cluster, despite being vaccinated. Wed Streeting, the health secretary, now saying that this outbreak is moving at a fast pace.
What we'll see in terms of the numbers of people affected and the severity of the impact, but what we've already seen in recent days in terms of the pace and the extent of the spread of this disease is unprecedented.
Well, the focus now here in Canterbury is vaccination, with the government announcing a targeted rollout for around 5,000 students living in halls here at the University of Kent, due to begin in the coming days. In the meantime, I've watched thousands of students since Monday morning snake along huge queues to collect those preventative antibiotics being offered to those who may have come into contact with the infection. There are concerns, though, being raised by schools, particularly across Kent, on how quickly this was acted upon, with Wes Streeting telling the House yesterday that measures have been in place since last Friday.
Mr. Speaker, it is important that the House and the wider public understands that even before the public health alert was issued, students and young people who had been in close contact with suspected cases were being offered antibiotics. This is precisely what one would expect as a rapid response.
Well, England's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Nick, has now said while this outbreak is having consequences here in Kent, it is now of national significance, with cases expected to rise.
Emma Corr reporting. Let's turn to another Emma. Emma Wall is Professor, Clinical Professor of Infectious Diseases, based at the Blizzard Institute at Queen Mary University in London, and joins me now. Just to explain, this is a cohort, of course, that are not protected by a vaccine that is now applicable. What age did that come in, and what, of course, where are you on the idea, Professor, that calls of those in their later teens should actually now be given this kind of vaccination? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. So this vaccine was rolled out in 2015. It's a new vaccine against MenB, which is traditionally been a very difficult target to generate a vaccine against. And it was introduced into the national programme, so the birth cohort in 2015 have all received it. Traditionally, outbreaks in older adults and teenagers were caused by MenC, a different vaccine, and those outbreaks have been virtually eliminated by the older vaccine that the Year 9 pupils still get, ACWY. We're in a really unprecedented and unusual situation of an MenB outbreak in students who didn't receive that initial vaccine because they're too old from the 2015 cohort. And so using vaccination now as a targeted approach to help contain the outbreak in terms of ring vaccination to try and protect around the ring of people who've been exposed is a sensible strategy and a typical part of outbreak management. But the core bit of this is around the antibiotics and people who've been exposed taking those antibiotics to eliminate the bacteria which might be living in their upper nose and throat, which then would mean that they could pass it on.
Why is MenB seemingly so much more virulent than other strains, Professor?
But actually, they're all virulent. We just don't perceive the others as being so virulent because we have got good vaccines against them, so we don't see those cases anymore. But MenB is traditionally difficult to vaccinate against, but all the meningococci are virulent. Up to 1 million people in the Sahel, in the West African region, where called the meningitis belt, will die in a wave of epidemic meningitis that occurs there. I'm not saying that's going to happen here. This is a different strain from those epidemic strains, but meningococcus generally has form in causing outbreaks and spread, and we've got excellent tools to contain that.
It has been reported, and I'll use those words again, it has been reported that this could have been passed on by teenagers sharing vapes at this nightclub. If they did, and I say again, it's a big if, is that a way that it could be spread, do you think, Professor?
Definitely. So we always say this is spread by kissing. This is not COVID. This is a bacteria. It's spread by close saliva contact. So if you've had close saliva contact, whether that's using drugs, whether that is sharing vapes, whether that's kissing, whether that's sharing drinks, that's the main exposure and route of transmission.
Easter is around the corner. Obviously, at the moment, it would appear to be Kent University, but there will be parents with children and there will be teenagers at universities in Surrey and Sussex and that surrounding belt and Hertfordshire. What should they be doing, Professor?
So it's a huge concern for all parents nationally, I'm sure, and all students as well, that they could be exposed. The most important thing is to be aware of the signs and symptoms of meningitis. Make sure that you look out if you feel unwell in any way, that you think particularly disproportionately unwell to how you think you ought to be feeling in that situation, to seek urgent medical help, because we know that if someone's developing signs and symptoms, getting antibiotics in as early as possible is important. If you are notified as a contact of any case and offered antibiotics, definitely take them. The biggest risk at the moment is that students who have left the university campus because they're frightened and gone back home early without receiving their antibiotics to prevent contact, they're the people who are most at risk. And so if they're contacted by text or any form of electronic message, go to your GP, find a way to get those antibiotics to eliminate that risk of onward transmission.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Emma Wall is Clinical Professor of Infectious Diseases based at the Blizzard Institute at Queen Mary University in London. Let's bring into the conversation Dr. Simon Williams, Public Health Researcher and Lecturer at Swansea University. Good to have you on, Doctor. I mean, in a perfect world, we would now, everybody born before 2015 in this cohort, we'd be running out these vaccinations, but presumably that'd be hugely expensive. Do you have any idea of what that cost would be? Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me, Nick. Great to speak to you again.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I think in a perfect world, I mean, it's easy for us in public health to say we should ensure that everyone's covered with this vaccine and has access to this treatment. But of course, there's always cost considerations, and it is primarily cost effectiveness. I mean, the MenB vaccine is somewhat more expensive than some of the other routine vaccines. For example, whether it's the flu vaccine, it's approximately twice the price for the NHS to procure. So, you know, we're talking maybe about £20 per vaccine or thereabouts.
Would it, the way the professor describes it, you just need a couple of students who are understandably concerned. They then go home to, let's just make it up, the north of it. They go to Durham just to make it up. How on earth are we going to give a keep check on this, Doctor?
Well, luckily, as was said, you know, the meningitis is a very dangerous disease in terms of, you know, it's got quite a high case fatality rate. So approximately 5 to 10% of those who might catch it can potentially have lethal complications from it. But the good thing is that it doesn't spread in the way that, you know, flu, COVID, obviously that's highly transmissible. So it is much easier for contact tracers, for public health authorities to follow up who may have been in close contact, and hopefully limit through the provisional antibiotics the spread of that. But you're right, it is a concern. It is important that everyone who may have been in contact in Kent, particularly around that nightclub, particularly around the university and school campuses, are vigilant, both themselves and others, in terms of any symptoms that they may have that might be associated with meningitis.
Lastly, as a layman, I look at what the UK HSA, UK Health Security Agency, and what the government are doing, and I would say they seem to be doing pretty much everything they can at seemingly a good speed. That's a layman's view. Doctor, would you concur?
I would concur. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, everything is being done and done the right way by the health authorities. I mean, I do think there is a case to put back on the, and I think it is being reviewed by the JCVI, that is the vaccination kind of advisory group, whether we look at this. You know, it's been referred to as once in a generation, but of course that is the generation that has kind of a lack of immunity, that is young adults, adolescents born before 2015, and think of whether we should be recommending that they get vaccinated more widely, not just, you know, in this kind of affected outbreak area.
Dr. Good speaking with you again. Seems we always speak for all the wrong reasons. One day it'll be on a positive note. Dr. Simon Williams, public health researcher and lecturer at Swansea University. Your calls. We don't want to add in any sense, way, shape or form to any form of panic, but your reaction to that, particularly as it is being reported that trying to get these vaccinations privately would seem virtually impossible. The dwindling stocks, if you want to try and get yourself or your teenager or whatever, and we'll look at that. Also coming up later in the show, the disturbing figure that shows that 1 in 10 working-age Britons now are on some form of disability benefits. In a speech earlier this week, this was in part addressed by Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden.
By a system that doesn't give them enough opportunity and too readily funnels them down a path labelled unfit for work.
More on that after this. It is 7:16, LBC News Headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Health officials working to contain an outbreak of meningitis in Kent say it's the fastest developing they've seen. The United States has used some of the most powerful bombs in its arsenal to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. And the Scottish Parliament has rejected plans to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. LBC weather, sunshine for most, the odd shower for parts of Scotland, a mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise is closed because of an accident between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are queues. There were long delays on the M1 southbound. There's one lane closed because a vehicle has broken down between junction 11 for Luton and junction 10 for Luton Airport. There are queues on the North Circular southbound from the Ilford flyover to the Barking flyover, not helped by the closure of the M25. In Mayfair, Barclay Street northbound is partly blocked because of a gas leak between Stratton Road and Hay Hill. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield because of problems with the overhead wires. That also means that Greater Anglia have delays of up to 25 minutes and cancellations between Shenfield and Liverpool Street.
This is LBC.
My mum, a legend to the end. A tough time, made easier by Co-op Funeral Care. A proper chat over a cuppa, a few classic mumisms, that camping trip in Skegness. And we've got it. A brilliant goodbye that felt right.
We're here in your community to guide, support, or simply talk things through. However you choose to say goodbye, we help you own it. Co-op. Owned by you. Right by you. Search Co-op Funeral Care for your nearest funeral home.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
So,
What's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 after 7, coming to your calls. Paul, Peter, you will be the first to get through. Just quickly, some of the front pages you're waking up to. I won't share all of them, but most of them do go with the meningitis story. The Sun have actually spoken with one of the one of the students down at Kent. It would appear she is getting better. Her name's Annabelle. She lost her sight for 2 days and she still can't walk, although the doctors are very helpful with going forward, but that shows the level there. I was blinded by the killer bug, is the Sun. Front page of the Mail, meningitis outbreak, worst we've ever seen, say experts. Front page of the Times, fatal meningitis outbreak triggers national response. They're all really going with the same story. We will, of course, please don't think we're not going to go over to the United States, where Trump is seeming increasingly isolated. As I said earlier, is the lone wolf turning into a lame duck president. Britain hit by Trumpflation is the front page of the Mirror. We will go there. To the websites, just quickly, the LBC app has the story I mentioned briefly at the start. A baby girl now fighting for her life in an ICU intensive care unit, part of this meningitis outbreak. And just one other story online, Mail Online reporting Netflix are saying they are done with the Sussexes. The showbiz Bible Variety reporting that Netflix have set up with this. We will not put thanks, but no thanks. No more deals with the Sussexes. We might look at that. As I said, we will go to global affairs, but let's stay with it. It is a huge domestic story. Paul in Manchester. Now, I think we're talking about your daughter. What happened, sir, and when? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So my daughter was at university in Bristol in 2022. Had been out on a Saturday night. Had phoned me the next day. She said she felt poorly and she'd lost her phone, so we were annoyed with her. By the next day, she got really, really ill quite quickly.
Right.
Came back from university, couldn't take the full day there. She was in a lab doing chemistry.
So she came back that day. So the day she said, "I feel ill, Dad," is the day she came back, just to clarify.
No, sorry. She went into university the next day.
Right,
And then came home feeling really poorly. And just by complete coincidence, her roommate, who was doing medical sciences, had done a lecture on meningitis that morning.
Oh, my God. And
she recognised the signs. She said, "Have you got a rash?" They looked, she had a rash. They took her into A&E, and A&E sent her home.
Where are we now? We're at home in Manchester or in Bristol now?
We're in Bristol.
A&E and Bristol sent her home. Right, okay, right.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Well, she's just extremely fortunate. Again, her mother's an A&E consultant, and she came down to Bristol extremely quickly.
Yeah.
And got her back into the hospital and said, "I think my daughter's got meningitis," and managed to almost force her way to get antibiotics, because getting antibiotics at that point is the critical response. And the longer you leave it, it's such a pernicious disease that it'll kill you within hours if you don't get the antibiotics.
To clarify, this was, they call it MenB. This was meningitis B, was it? This sort of killer strain, was it, Paul?
Yeah, it was. And she got sepsis as well with it as well. So she was in a coma for a week on life support.
Oh, my God. That's a week and thanks again.
No, and as I said to the producer, she had it when she was 6 months old as a baby as well. So she's one of these incredible people who survived it twice.
Oh, How is she now? You mentioned sepsis, and I know in some instances that can lead to amputations. How is your daughter now?
She made an absolutely complete recovery, completes her studies, is now working in London, living her best life, but she's been so lucky to have survived it. It's a terrible thing, and all I'm saying is that I think it's absolutely so important now that these kids get vaccinated, the ones who are outside that cohort, because it's a terrible thing to live through as a parent, and my heart goes out to everybody in this situation now. It's really distressing.
Final question. You mentioned that her mother, who I assume is your wife, but it doesn't matter either way, is an A&E consultant. Do you think, Paul, that had that woman not had that level of experience, she might not have been able to persuade the hospital to take it so seriously?
I think both times My daughter's had meningitis. If her mum hadn't been an A&E consultant, she wouldn't have made it. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind, because the hospitals see so little of it. You know, you've got this outbreak now where they'll be getting, they'll be on alert, but typically they don't see it and they don't diagnose it quickly.
Will you give her my best wishes? My goodness me, as this story hits the headlines, what it must mean to you, her mother, to the girl and everyone else. Paul, thank you very much for calling in 724. Peter's in South Ockenden, and you have an experience of meningitis. Peter, what is it? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. And first of all, very good show.
Oh.
I enjoy it.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much indeed. Please.
Yeah, I was working in Basildon in Essex, in Eastgate shopping mall. I was a security guard. And we got a call to go out to the back to see an old lady that collapsed in the background. Right? So anyway, we went out there, had a look. Then a few weeks later, on a Friday, I felt ill about 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was sitting on the chair in the mess room and I was shaking like a gooden.
Right.
The table was moving. Anyway, the paramedics came. Oh, he's got the flu. And they sent me home in a taxi.
Right.
I remember getting in the taxi and I remember throwing up outside the front gate. And that is all I remember. I know I was shaking and felt fluey. Anyway, the next thing I woke up, I was in hospital. 11 days I was out.
All you remember is getting to your front gate and being and vomiting. And then your next memory is you're lying in a hospital bed and you've lost 11 days of your life. Am I just clear?
Exactly.
Right.
And I found out that they gave me a lumbar punch on the Sunday.
God.
And that is when they told me I had meningitis.
Do you remember, was it meningitis B? Was it the one we're talking about
now? No, it was the viral one. I was extremely lucky.
Right.
But what I would urge, and I can't stress it enough, everybody should go and get this vaccination against it, because...
it's not available, Peter. That's the thing. You say everyone should get it. It's not available, sport.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate. You know, they spend money on everything else, but not on this. And
How old were you when you got this?
This was in... I'm 77 now. This was in 2005, so I was about
50-something, mid-50s or something. And did it? How long before you really felt properly fit again after that? Did it take weeks, months? What would you say?
It took about 6 months.
Did it really?
When I come out of hospital, I was sitting in the conservatory watching the aircraft. That's my hobby. Anyway, I went out and tried to paint the shed.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I couldn't lift my arms because I was so tired, my eyes and everything. And I do suffer with spondylosis.
Oh, yes. And so you weren't able to go back to work as a security guard then up at Basildon, were you?
No, not until about 6 months. Then I got a phone call. When am I going back?
Well, you were lucky to live. Peter, thanks for sharing so much. Thanks for your kind words about the show. You look after yourself. Thank you. Mandy in Maidstone.
In
Kent.
Good morning.
Right. Hello, this is in the heartland in Maidstone. What happened to your daughter, is it? Good morning.
Right, I'm trying to keep it brief because it's a long story. But
okay, don't worry.
She was 18, just doing A-levels, woke me one morning and said, can you bring a paracetamol up? I said, lazy sod, you know, anyway.
Right.
She said, I've got this relentless headache, it won't go. Anyway, long story short, then I took her to the doctors. He said it was a migraine. So he said, if she's sick by 1 o'clock this afternoon, that confirms it. And bang on 1 o'clock, she was sick.
Oh, my gosh.
No rash, nothing. And I took her. And he looked at her head and lights and all of that. And he said, no, she had no rash, nothing to worry about. Long story short, 7 days I took her to A&E, separate seven times.
Right.
They discharged her seven times.
Oh, gosh.
He said I was an overprotective mother. On the Friday, some nurses came to the house, did some blood tests. He phoned on the Monday and said, oh, my God. She's got a severe infection, so she's had it all that time. Went
right.
to went to hospital, had a lumbar puncture, confirmed it was meningitis, but it was the viral, not the bacterial.
Well, I think we might have lost her if it was the bacterial one in that time.
But wait.
Here we go.
So she was on antibiotics.
Yeah.
And then a microbiologist 2 days later was examining the fluid taken from her spine.
Yes.
When I went to the hospital to see her, she wasn't in her bed, and I was called into the relatives' room. I thought, yeah. And they said, we can't apologise enough. If she hadn't have had an overprotective mother, she has got severe bacterial meningitis, and she was in isolation for 10 days.
How is she? How long ago was it? She was 18.
She was 18. She's 35 now.
She went to university.
But the nurse said another couple of hours and we're going to be looking at a totally different story. And after that, she took herself to the doctors because she was going to university and asked for the vaccine and because she'd had it. And the receptionist said, don't be silly, you haven't had it. Anyway, she'd look at my notes. And then they whisked us through and she had the vaccine and then went off to university. And luckily,
she had an overprotective mum. Mandy, thank you. Give her my best regards. Some years ago, but my goodness, as you see those headlines, particularly as you're in Kent, it will come back to you. Thank you for that. A couple of emails. Alex in Chelmsford. Let's fix this mass roll of vaccination at speed. Almost every uni student is about to go home for Easter, spreading it nationwide. Don't let kids die unnecessarily. It costs a lot, but surely we can send a couple of less planes to the Middle East. Same subject, David said. Easter holidays approaching. It could get worse. Should the university students stay put? Oh, this poor cohort. Remember, these were the kids who their education was in some part devastated by COVID. What more do they have to go through? We will, of course, look at other stories. And in the world of business,
the boss of Warner Brothers is in line for more than $700 million after the $111 billion sale of the Hollywood studio to Paramount. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly.
And for President Trump, as key staff quit and he questions the relationship with the UK, what do voters in Oklahoma City, one of his real bedrock states, what do they think of Trump's war in Iran and gas, petrol hitting more than $4 a gallon?
Oh, I'm all for that war in Iran. I think the Iranian regime needs to take a fall. And frankly, a few cents more at the pump is a pittance compared to what it would be if Iran starts the nuclear war.
We're with his MAGA base. We'll have a full report. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
A targeted vaccination program is rolling out for students in Kent following an outbreak of meningitis. 15 cases have been confirmed since Saturday, including 2 deaths. US officials say its military have used powerful bombs to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran's blockade of the waterway has rattled international markets and caused oil prices to soar. And the Scottish Parliament has rejected plans to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. MSPs voted against the bill by 69 votes to 57 after a 3.5-hour debate last night. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland, a mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
All of this criticism of the President of the United States actually only serves to protect Keir Starmer. And I wonder whether there are Labour MPs who a month or so ago would have been chomping at the bit to get rid of him, now see a war in the Middle East, a very angry President, a volatile economy, and think, not the moment. And be honest, is Angela Rayner going to have done a better job in handling Donald Trump than Keir Starmer has currently done?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and help support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
The tax year end on April the 5th is approaching, so don't let your 2025-26 tax-free cash ISA allowance go to waste. Make the most of it with a 4.01% rate from Marcus by Goldman Sachs, the 5-time Which-recommended savings provider that's backed by over 150 years of Goldman Sachs expertise. Open your Marcus cash ISA at marcus.co.uk. Time's ticking.
Interest rate is 4.01% AER, 3.94% tax-free variable, includes a bonus rate of 0.74% tax-free fixed for the first 12 months, rate correct as of 5th of March 26.
The famous five were boarding the train, ready for their next great Western adventure.
Who knew Wales and the Southwest had so many myths and legends? Said Anne. Such amazing stories. King Arthur's Camelot, the Giants of Avon Gorge, the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Oh, I do like listening to a good tale, said George excitedly. You're good at telling tales too, teased Dick.
Great Western Railway. Legendary adventures start here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 7.35, still a lot of calls coming in on meningitis. I will just say again, of course we're going to do the Donald Trump story and the latest in Iran, and we're in and among his MAGA base in Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma, one of the big Republican states, so we will be doing that. But we're staying with this domestic story, and we'll come back to it after we dive into the world of the city. Joined by Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. And for which company is this a kind of magic? Morning, Christian.
Good morning, Nick. Well, look, you and I, I don't think we get commission. I'm not sure what the bonus scheme is like at LBC, but talk about a chunky payday. We have discussed over recent weeks, haven't we, the Warner Brothers deal and the tussle between Netflix and Paramount. Netflix ultimately said not at any price and not at that price, thank you very much. And then it was Paramount who emerged on top. Well, look, the boss of Warner Brothers, David Zaslav, is in line to make more than $700 million from that deal. Not bad, not bad at all. That is a slice out of the $111 billion sale of the Hollywood studio Warner Brothers Discovery to Paramount. Now, that's a reflection of the fact that he has won quite substantial plaudits from shareholders for overseeing an auction that at one point appeared to be in the bag for Netflix, and then towards the very end went along with the knockout bid from Paramount. I suppose it might raise a few eyebrows in the industry, given that there's likely now to be, if this deal goes through all the regulatory hurdles, probably some streamlining of operations, to use corporate speak. In other words, a lot of people will lose their jobs. But they do insist that the future is bright for the combined entity, and it's certainly very bright for the current head of Warner Brothers.
Is it a good deal, Christian?
Well, I can see the rationale for it. Don't forget that beyond Netflix's bid for the entertainment wing of the business, Paramount want the news business, CNN and everything that comes with it. That now puts it firmly into a political situation in the US, and lots of people are grumbling and mumbling about what that might mean for media plurality, etc. Don't forget the people behind this bid are quite close to Donald Trump. But I can see a rationale for it, but there will be some people who say, God, this is a little bit of a trophy asset, a little bit of vanity, and a little bit of an overpayment. But you know, we'll find out in the years ahead what it means for the wider industry.
Well, I've no idea whether that boss who's get around $700 million, whether he has any children. But if he does, maybe he can help them buy a home, because your City AM chronicles how difficult it is for so many young people to get on the housing ladder.
That's right. Absent the $700 million windfall from a mega deal, about a third of first-time buyers in the UK are now having to rely on help from family, from that bank of mum and dad, to get on the housing ladder, if indeed it is still a ladder. Some people say it's more of a rope leap. And about half of people making that move for their first property now require two full-time incomes to secure that mortgage. About 52% of first-time buyers now rely on at least two incomes. That's up from just 40% in the 90s, and 54% of people on the first rung of that ladder are hooked into a very long mortgage of at least 30 years or more. The age of first-time buyers is going up and up as well. Average age of a first-time buyer in England was about 29 in the mid-1990s. It's now 34, 35. And there's been a huge collapse, which I don't think will surprise anybody, in the number of people under 25 buying their first home. This data is all according to Skipton's regular Home Affordability Index, the Building Society. And it comes at a time, of course, when people are really starting to fret about mortgages and new mortgages and whether this is going to be the year that they're able to get one, given what's going on in the wider economy.
Fretting about mortgages. Lastly, fretting about jobs and a car manufacturer cutting possibly how many jobs, Christian?
Well, we're talking now about Bentley. I appreciate yours is idling outside the studio as we speak.
With the driver, polishing it, yeah.
You're quite right, too. Just putting a little bit of leather polish on your seats. But Bentley is moving into the EV market, along with a lot of other manufacturers. Of course, those decisions and investments behind that would have been signed off years ago, perhaps not to know that there was a little bit of the steam was going to run out of the EV market. Anyway, Bentley is cutting about 300 jobs. Most of those are in office positions, not really on the factory floor. But although there has been lower than expected levels of demand for EVs, Bentley is pushing ahead with the launch of its first suburban SUV. But they are caught up in what everyone else is caught up in, which is a little bit of uncertainty around that market and enormous competition from China, of course. So Bentley stressed that these job reductions are just about maintaining their efficiency, and it's nothing to do with demand, which they say remains high. But there are some competing forces going on in the EV market, whether you're talking about the budget Chinese imports or indeed those luxury Bentleys.
Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Talk around the same time tomorrow. Thank you. 7:40. Lena, you'll be the next caller on meningitis, but we are reflecting other stories. So, Lena, I'll come to you in just a moment. And this would seem to be, in a sense, the ultimate irony, because staff employed by the BMA, the British Medical Association, have voted overwhelmingly to strike after the union has given them below-inflation pay rises. Of course, I remind you, this is the union or the association that is leading out the junior or resident doctors in a series of walkouts in their industrial action. Andrew Jordan, Industrial Relations Officer at the BMA, workplace representative of the GMB union, joins me now. Thanks for coming on, Mr. Jordan. Obviously, my listeners, we're all coming pretty fresh to this. What is at stake here? Where can we not, unfortunately, find any accord? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on your show. So, yes, I am a BMA member of staff. I'm also a GMB workplace representative. So the GMB is the trade union that represents BMA staff. Vast majority of them are in the GMB trade union. What the GMB does sort of autumn time each year is it submits a pay claim to the BMA as its employer on behalf of the staff which are members of the union. And we did a piece of work this year to look at the levels of pay erosion. You'll be familiar with that term in regards to the BMA referring to it the other way around. The levels of pay erosion that BMA staff have been have suffered over recent years, and we can see that in the real terms, BMA staff pay is down up to 16.6% over recent years in real terms value. Obviously, that has an impact on our members, GMB members' cost of living, how they're able to go about their daily lives, what they're able to afford, etc., etc. And it's having a real impact. We submitted a pay claim for 6.5% consolidated pay uplift this year as part of it at the time when RPI inflation year to date, August 2025, was 4.6%. So, you know, just shy of 2% above the rate of inflation at the time. That was in an effort to, A, prevent further erosion of BMA staff pay, but also to try and bring us back and reverse the kind of tide. So that's where we are with things.
What just a word on the vote. I note that you have an 80% turnout, which is pretty strong, a 96% voting and an 80% walkout turnout. I'm so sorry. The strike, the staff will walk out for 48 hours from Friday, March 27th. Can I ask you, Mr. Jordan, what sort of jobs, how many people are we talking about and what sort of jobs do they perform?
So there's just shy of 600 people that are BMA staff that are covered by the GMB trade union. The jobs cover the whole range of jobs that you'll find across the association. You've got those that are sort of directly member facing, so those that are representative, those that take part in negotiations, etc. You've got colleagues in admin, in media, you know, everything that you would expect to find in across a trade union and across a professional association.
Lastly, what is the irony that's being expressed in some media circles that, of course, the BMA are requesting what you would seem to be requesting for their own members, but for their own doctors, I'm so sorry, for their resident doctors, but don't seem to have the same view towards their staff. How do you react to that, Mr. Jordan?
What I would say to that is, obviously, doctors have suffered significant real terms pay erosion since 2008, as has been highlighted. BMA staff have played a crucial role in in supporting elected members and BMA members as a whole in seeking to reverse that, to rightly seeking to reverse that. But what we can't have, it's not really tenable, is it to have a situation in which BMA staff are being asked to accept sub-inflationary pay awards. And that's what we've found in this situation. You know, management, the management offer from this year, yes. Their original offer was 2%. Consolidated. They have upped it to 2.75% now, but it was 2% at a time when the government was making a recommendation for doctors through the DDRB of 2.5%, and the BMA was saying that that's indefensible.
Andrew Jordan, I will leave it there. You're with the BMA Industrial Relations Officer. You're also a workplace representative of the GMB Union. Thank you for that. You listen to LBC 744 News breaking at this time. Now, the number of cases of meningitis being investigated in the UK Health Security Agency in the Kent outbreak is now up to 20. That's from 15 yesterday. That's confirmed today. So that's now at 20 as of today, Wednesday, rising from 15 as it was yesterday. We'll take more of your calls. Lena will take your calls on that, and Steve as well. Coming up after the news, well, hailed as a major investment with Spain after the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, that speech she gave yesterday. We're speaking with one of her senior colleagues and asking what that might mean. Then back to meningitis, and of course we will be going to the United States. Please don't think we're ignoring that. But this meningitis story is not just a major domestic story. It is still developing in a sense. We're at 7:45 now. LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The UK Health Security Agency says the number of cases of meningitis in Kent has risen to 20. The US says its military has used powerful bombs to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. And the Scottish Parliament has rejected plans to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. LBC weather. Sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England. A high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise is closed because of an accident between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are long delays. There are also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. Traffic has been held before junction 13 for Staines because of an accident. There are long delays on the M1 southbound. There's one lane closed because a vehicle has broken down between junction 11 for Luton and junction 10 for Luton Airport. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield because of some problems with the overhead wires at Ilford. That also means that Greater Anglia have delays of up to 25 minutes and cancellations between Shenfield and Liverpool Street. And Southern services aren't moving between Birkbeck and Beckenham Junction. That's because of a problem with the points.
This is LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Dell, Dell's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan? Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? Well, whatever your name is. If you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday, and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
Creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49, let's get back to our conversation about meningitis. Lena is in Bury St Edmunds now. Again, you have a family member who had it, is that right, Lena? Good morning.
Good morning, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I had a son who was 19.
Yes.
In his, it happened in December the 10th. He was in his second year at university.
Do you mean December of last year, Lena, just to clarify?
No, sorry. No, this was 20 years ago.
Right.
20 years ago.
Right, okay.
Anyway, he'd been out drinking with one of his housemates the day before. Thought he just had a very bad hangover, was sick and everything.
This is the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he intended to go, he thought he'd be okay to go to uni in the afternoon, and he wasn't. Anyway, he rang me up at 7 o'clock that night saying he felt worse, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So I told him to go to hospital. He said, no, I haven't got money for a taxi. I said, well, you can get an ambulance. Yeah. And then his housemate came on the phone. His housemate, he was sharing a house with six junior doctors. And his housemate came on the phone and he said to me, this is serious, he needs to go, can you convince him to go? And I told the boy, I said, no, you just get an ambulance and go with, you know, you could go with him.
Right.
So he went with the other guy he'd been out with, who was also a junior doctor the day before, a trainee doctor rather, and they went, and it was by this time it was Saturday night at A&E, and they were basically left all through the night, just, you know, it was a busy department.
Okay.
And by the time they got taken, which was about 5 o'clock in the morning, we got a phone call from the hospital saying, could we get there as quick as we could, which was frightening. We were in Essex, he was in three and a half hours away. Time we got there, he had developed septicemia.
Right.
And he was in intensive care.
So where was he then, Lena?
In Southampton.
He's at Southampton University.
I see. Yeah.
Okay, but they caught it once then and gave the right medication and drugs.
Yes, they did. They gave him the drugs. They called everybody who'd been in contact with him.
Right.
Because the other boy actually had it as well.
Good
but
gosh.
even his girlfriend, who he had been with the week before, she was contacted up in Leeds where she was studying. And we were all given when the public health people got involved, they acted very, very quickly.
All right, that's good to hear. And they were on it. Lena, I have to end there. Please give your son, it is some years ago, so obviously I'm delighted to say he's better now. I hope all his mates are as well. Lena, thank you for that story. Really harrowing drive for you there. 3.5 hours to get to your son when you get that phone call from the hospital. Unimaginable for you. Thank you for telling your story. At 7:52. Now, let's go to other matters. And with the uncertainty being generated by the current occupant of the White House, is it time to perhaps love thy neighbour a little bit more? Get closer to some of our friends in the European Union? Well, on a business footing, it would seem to make sense, as the UK and Spain have agreed a multi-million pound investment deal, creating jobs here in the UK and also making conditions better for Brits in Spain. More details from Paymaster General, Minister for European Union Relations, Nick Thomas-Symonds. Good to have you on, Minister. Let's talk a little bit more about the upside of this. Trust you well. What can you tell us? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Very good to join you. I think what you've seen today, and that the Chancellor will set out more details later, is obviously that real importance of inward investment from European partners. This is Exolum. This is about liquid storage, things like aviation fuel here in the UK. We think it will attract significant amounts of exports. I just want to come specifically to this issue, really, of barriers to business, because that is the work that I have been doing, as you know, Nick. I think we've discussed it before since I became a minister. And it isn't about going back to the single market, customs union or freedom of boom, but it is about pragmatically building a better relationship with business. Let me just show you a specific example. Like, what are we talking about reducing barriers to business?
Mm.
Now, I have here what's called an export health certificate. I don't know if you can see it, Nick.
I can see it, Minister.
Now, businesses have had to buy nearly a million of these since 2023. And I have in front of me the Export Health, a single certificate here. It is 22 pages long. It has 56 56 wet stamps on it.
And just to clarify, sir, the minister is holding up 22 pages of A4 paper, so everyone can be familiar. So that's 22 pieces of A4 paper. Minister, back to you.
22 pages, 56 wet stamps. I want to be able to say to businesses, we can take this away. That's the work that I am doing. This is obviously the agri-food sector.
I was going to ask, what's it for? What would that allow me to get out or get in?
Right, so what this would allow you to do, what I've got in front of me here, is about exporting pasta. So pasta right. that has been made, it's actually, I won't go too much into the detail of the business, but it's a London-based yep. business, Nick, yep. that handed, you know, my team all these different certificates to illustrate the problem. Now, what I want to do is to finalise by this year's annual summit the legal text, and you will, I'm sure, put to me quite rightly, when am I saying to businesses, we can take these costs
away? Have you been looking at my crib sheet?
I've been interviewed many times by you, Nick. I know quite rightly where this goes.
Go on, Minister.
And I want to take away fees. So what are the specific fees? £200 for one of these certificates, £61 identity check, £1,400 if you're selected for sampling. I want to be starting to do that by the middle of next year. That is the work that I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to do to cut down barriers for business.
All credit to you, all strength to you and your colleagues. Now, there are some quarters where they are reacting to the Chancellor's speech yesterday, her visit later today, despite her saying yesterday in the May's lecture that rejoining the customs union and single market was, quotes, a red line. Despite saying that, there are some who are saying you're trying to cosy up and get back into the European Union. I have to put that to you, Minister.
That is not the case, Nick. That is absolutely not the case. And we certainly do not want to go backwards to the debates we were having in 2016, 17, 18. We were elected on a manifesto in 2024 saying we wouldn't do those things. We wouldn't go back to single market, customs union, or freedom of movement. But within that framework, I take a pragmatic, not an ideological approach. I'm trying to reduce burdens on businesses. And my sense, Nick, going up and down the country, and I, as you can imagine, I'm out virtually every weekend knocking doors somewhere. Mm-hmm. That pragmatic approach of trying to help businesses and consumers here in the UK has got public support, in my view.
Look, good luck with what you're trying to do with that bizarre 22-page document, but I have to ask you, how are talks going on that youth mobility scheme? Because it's been reported that that's been delayed or stymied in some degree. Is that an indication of the trouble sometimes we experience with our European friends?
I think it's just the nature of negotiation. Now, before I was a Member of Parliament, I was a barrister, I was a media, I was involved in, I'm sad to say, dozens of negotiations over the years. And Nick, you know what it's like with negotiations. Mm-hmm. You will have opening positions, you will find that there's various things that are said as the negotiation proceeds. You then get to the business end of the negotiation. I remember when I was negotiating the common understanding with the European Union May last year, it went right to the wire. I don't really expect this to be any different.
All right, let's move to other matters. You might not have heard, but we have heard on the news bulletins within the last 15 minutes or so, the number of cases of meningitis in the Kent outbreak has risen to 20. I don't know if you're aware of that, Minister. How concerned are you by that? And is this possibly going to prompt changes to the way the government are bringing in the vaccination programme? More widespread, Minister?
Yeah, no, so, Nick, I just heard that figure of 20 just before I came on air. And, of course, the government will be led by the clinical evidence. But just a few points. I think it's important for your listeners. Firstly, there is a targeted vaccination programme now for the halls of residence at the University of Kent, Canterbury. Second, anyone who was at the chemistry club on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March should come forward for preventative antibiotics. And on the gov.uk website, there's a number of places, I think four places in total, where you can actually go and get the antibiotics. I just want to say a word as well, Nick, about symptoms. And again, they're on the gov.uk website. Things like a rash, fever, headaches. It's often said that it's almost like having a hangover, the type of symptoms here. And it's so important that if you have those symptoms, you are going forward for medical advice and attention. And then to your broader point in terms of looking beyond where we are, particularly on the vaccination programme, West Reading has asked the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, indeed working with the UK Health Security Agency, as to whether, of course, we need to look again at this and extend it. And you'll be aware, I'm sure, Nick, that one of the issues on vaccination is we have been vaccinating babies on MenB since 2015. Mm. But, of course, if you're older than that, and that is the cohort and generation that will obviously be now at university in sixth form, then they will not have had that vaccination. So that's why starting, yes, with this targeted vaccination at the University of Kent, Canterbury, but obviously we will extend if that's what the clinical advice says.
Last couple of questions, if I can, Minister, moving you to the global conflict. Is there any set of circumstances in which you could see the United Kingdom deploying warships to the Strait of Hormuz?
So on the Strait of Hormuz, they are discussions that are ongoing at the moment in terms of what the UK may or may not contribute. So forgive me, Nick, for not cutting straight into detail. But just to pick up on the Strait of Hormuz, clearly the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz has a hugely adverse effect on our economy. You can already start to see it happening. You can start to see it happening in terms of the increase in the price of a barrel of oil. And people will themselves, I know, be concerned about prices at the pump. So the government is engaged in discussions both with Gulf allies and indeed allies here in the UK, and indeed Defence Secretary speaking every day to his US counterpart as well.
Last question. It was confirmed yesterday that Iran's national security chief, Ali Larijani, has been killed. Does the United Kingdom welcome that news, Minister?
Listen, I certainly welcome any degradation of that regime, Nick. I think that that regime in Iran was an evil regime. It persecuted its own citizens. It was a threat to the region. It was a threat to the wider world. And indeed, through its terrorist proxies, was a threat to us here in the United Kingdom.
Nick Thomas-Symonds, Paymaster General, Minister for European Union Relations, talking about this deal with Spain and his determination to do away with reams of paper that is holding Britain back. Thank you for your time, Minister. 8 o'clock, LBC News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, health officials say the number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen to 20. Two people have died since the outbreak was first reported on Saturday. Government Minister Nick Thomas-Symonds has just updated Nick on the work to tackle the outbreak.
There is a targeted vaccination programme now for the halls of residence at the University of Kent, Canterbury. Second, anyone who was at the chemistry club on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March should come forward for preventative antibiotics. And on the gov.uk website, there's a number of places, I think four places in total, where you can actually go and get the antibiotics.
Speaking to Nick earlier this morning, public health expert Dr. Simon Williams said the quick response will hopefully limit any wider spread.
Luckily, meningitis is a very dangerous disease in terms of, you know, it's got quite a high case fatality rate. So approximately 5 to 10% of those who might catch it can potentially have lethal complications from it. But the good thing is that it doesn't spread in the way that, you know, flu, COVID, obviously that's highly transmissible. So it is much easier for contact tracers, for public health authorities to follow up who may have been in close contact.
The US military says it's used powerful bombs to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz overnight. Tehran's blockade of the waterway has rattled international markets and caused oil prices to soar in recent days. Here, and the Conservatives will seek to force a Commons vote on scrapping a planned fuel duty rise in September. Ministers say it's still too early to predict how petrol prices will change, but it will be kept under review in the coming months. The Scottish Parliament has rejected plans to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. After a 3.5-hour debate last night, MSPs voted against the bill by 69 votes to 57. Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, has partially reopened this morning. It's been closed for more than a week after a large fire destroyed an adjoining building. And Arsenal have secured their place in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They beat Bayer Leverkusen 2-0 at home last night. Manchester City are out of the competition, though, after losing 2-1 to Real Madrid. Chelsea are also out after losing 3-1 to the holders Paris Saint-Germain. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,403. It closed up 85 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, we get through so many snacks. Have you got anything to help me save?
Well, we're always matching and lowering prices. So hundreds of Sainsbury's fresh fruit, veg and everyday products are price matched to Aldi. And every week with Nectar, you can save money on thousands of the products your family loves. So you can snack away knowing you're saving money. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. Selected products, Aldi price match not in NI. Nectar prices require Nectar account. Terms at sainsburys.co.uk/Aldi price match and nectar.com/prices terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight on Wednesday, March the 18th. The war of words continues over the war in the Gulf, the Iran-Israeli war on Iran. Claim and counterclaim by some, by the president and some of his key officials. And also, Trump has made a foolish mistake. He says NATO has made a foolish mistake on Iran. The tensions build and will be in and among the MAGA voters in Oklahoma. That's coming up in a few moments. Back here at home, 1 in 10 working age Britons are now on some form of disability benefits, with 1,000 successful claims a day. This was addressed in part earlier this week. Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden.
The best form of welfare reform is opportunity and work. Not just a welfare state, but a working state.
Plus, memorial benches have long served as a stoic way to mourn, offering quiet seats for reflection. But now, some councils are saying there are too many and not allowing any more memorial benches. Where are you, to bench or not to bench? And of course, we will come back to the biggest story, certainly in this country at the moment, as the number of cases of meningitis increases to 20. Emma Wall is a clinical professor of infectious diseases, Queen Mary University in London, and I spoke with her in the first hour of the show.
The most important thing is to be aware of the signs and symptoms of meningitis. Make sure that you look out if you feel unwell in any way, that you think particularly disproportionately unwell, to seek urgent medical help.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said, the war of words continues, with Donald Trump's top counter-terrorism official resigning, claiming that there was no imminent threat. The war started due to pressure from Israel. Donald Trump responding by saying that he was a good guy, but not particularly good at his job. Also calling into question the relationship with the United Kingdom. It's not as it was in the days of Sir Winston Churchill under Sir Keir Starmer. And on it went. Now, President Trump was hosting the Irish Premier to mark St. Patrick's Day. He used his Oval Office moment with the press to lash out again at Sir Keir, claiming our failure to support him had damaged that special relationship.
Who's the longest, the oldest, should be the best, always was the best until Keir came along, and I like him. He's a nice man. He says everything beautiful. He's a very nice man with a beautiful family. Everything's perfect, but he doesn't produce.
So compare and contrast Sir Keir and Sir Winston.
You see that man right there? You know who that is?
Churchill.
Winston Churchill. The late, great Winston Churchill. And, you know, unfortunately, Keir is not Winston Churchill.
NATO are making a foolish mistake by not supporting him in the Strait of Hormuz.
All of the NATO allies agreed with us, but they don't want to, you know, despite the fact that we help them so much, we have thousands of soldiers in different countries all over the world, and they don't want to help us, which is amazing. I mean, amazing.
And what of that claim from the counter-terror chief, Joe Kent, who stood down, that Iran posed no imminent threat, and the war was started due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby?
I always thought he was weak on security, very weak on security. It's a good thing that he's out, because he said that Iran was not a threat. Iran was a threat. Every country realized what a threat Iran was. The question is whether or not they wanted to do something about it.
So we've got a good sense of how we feel here in the UK. You can look across to France, to Germany, to Italy, to Japan, to Australia. There's not a lot of love in the room for most of his stance. But what about his MAGA voters? Well, we decided to get in and among them in Oklahoma, one of the states that really did help power Trump into the White House, and where, of course, a gallon of gas now, you're looking at maybe more north of $4. So What do red state voters, MAGA voters, make? Matthew Vira-Appa is a reporter and producer in Oklahoma City. He filed this report.
Here in Oklahoma, residents voted strongly in favor for President Trump in the 2024 election. Trump gained over 66% of the vote share, making it one of the most Republican states. But what do supporters of the president make of his ongoing military action against Iran? And is the conflict affecting the money in their pocket like it is for your listeners in the UK?
Yes, the gas is too high, but they know we need it. So if it go to $5, we still going to pay for it because they know we need gas to move around or we be stuck.
How much did you pay for gas?
$46.
How much has that changed?
About $12.
I've paid $47 and some change for fuel this week. I think it was actually closer to like $35 the last time I filled up.
It's a pittance compared to what nuclear holocaust that the Iranians want to bring the world would create.
The war is ridiculous too, but this is all Trump's fault. All this is Trump's fault. The gas, the food prices, everything is Trump's fault.
Getting involved in other countries' affairs is just not something like we as a country need to do when there's a lot of stuff right here at home we could be focusing on.
Oh, I'm all for that war in Iran. I think the Iranian regime needs to take a fall. I hope Reza Pahlavi becomes the king of Iran.
I believe we went into that conflict so that our president could escape the consequences of being on the Epstein list.
I'm just glad to be alive to be able to pay whatever it is, because if the Iranians bring nuclear holocaust to the world, none of us are going to be buying gasoline.
While President Trump might have come out on top here during the election, his recent action in Iran is clearly splitting opinion.
Matthew Vira-Appa reporting for LBC. To Matt Fry, who, of course, is on the LBC team sheet, Saturdays from 10 in the morning. Presenter, of course, and anchor for Channel 4 News, and he's joining us from Jerusalem. Matt Fry, you've seen a number of American presidents in a number of tricky, ticklish situations. What's his fan base? What's the whole of the United States? I appreciate you're in Jerusalem sport, but how is the whole of the United States reacting to Trump now? Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning to you, Nick. Well, if you look at the opinion polls, this is not a popular war. I mean, I would say two-thirds of the American public doesn't buy into this war. They didn't feel it was a necessary war. And it's understandable that they had their doubts, because Trump has been wavering and you know, shilly-shallying about the reasons for why he went to war. 2 weeks ago, it was an assassination threat. Then it was weapons of mass destruction. Then it was ballistic missiles. Then it was regime change. He was helping the demonstrators. I mean, they changed their tune all the time. And unlike that other pretty disastrous war of choice, you remember the one from 2003 against Saddam Hussein, which eventually, you know, spelled the end of Tony Blair's premiership and caused a huge rupture within the Labour Party and the country. At least in that war, they tried to sell it. They tried to sell the message. George W. Bush went out there over and over again giving speeches. They went to the United Nations, at least at the beginning. This one, he didn't consult anyone. Trump didn't talk to his allies. He didn't talk to his friends in the Gulf. He only talked to the Israelis. It's not even sure who he talked to in his cabinet. When you look at the splits that we see in the MAGA base, the majority of MAGA voters are still behind him, but there is a split within the MAGA base that we saw illustrated by Joe Kent, the guy who resigned yesterday with that scathing letter. That split seems to be evident within the cabinet. I mean, J.D. Vance, who's never short of a word or two, went into a witness protection program for the first 2 weeks of this war and has finally come out and said, yes, 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 he's in favor.
For a man who doesn't do self-doubt, do you think this will be troubling Trump in any way, shape or form, Matt?
Hard to tell, isn't it, behind that fake tan, that there is self-doubt churning away. I guess he must be a little bit worried. I mean, you know, it's wonderful, isn't it, that the ultimate guardrail to wars of choice will be the American consumer, the gas pump, you know, in places like Pennsylvania in the midterm election year. So I think he's got to pay attention to that, whether he likes it or not. But remember, Donald Trump came to office vowing to end all wars. He still wanted that Nobel Peace Prize. And then when he didn't get the Peace Prize, he wrote a letter to the Norwegian Prime Minister at the end of last year saying, I'm done with that peace business, right? So what's the other business? Well, he's doubling down. He seems to love using his superpower. Superpower, when you've got it to the American extent, is a bit of a temptation. I guess the mistake is that he thought he could do in Iran what he did in Venezuela, which was an extraordinarily smooth extraction of a president. Some call it a kidnapping. The guy's now waiting for his trial in a jail cell in Brooklyn. That is not the case with Iran. In fact, if anything, Nick, the very thing they try to avoid, which is to make Iran more hardline, is the very thing that has happened.
Lastly, you're anchoring and reporting from Jerusalem for Channel 4. How bullish is the mood there?
I wouldn't say bullish. I mean, I have just, you know, spent another night going down to the wonderful hotel shelter in the place where I'm staying. It's a bit like having a newborn baby again, Nick. You know, you're up all night long. But although, actually, to some extent, the alarms don't quite last as long. But, you know, you're up and you're down there in the cellar for 50 minutes. You're making new friends the whole time. It's a bit of a nightmare. On the other hand, it has to be said, the Israeli people, you know, they've been living in a state of war and siege for quite some time. Not as bad, of course, as the people of Gaza after October the 7th, but they have been living in a state of siege. And broadly speaking, they are behind this war. They understand the reasons for it much more than the reasons in America. However, oddly enough, it hasn't moved the dial in favour of the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu.
You look after yourself, Matt. Thanks for talking to us today. Matt Fry, he's on the LBC team sheet, of course, Saturday mornings at 10. But he's anchoring and presenting for Channel 4 News, joining us from Jerusalem, 14 after 8. Listening to that, Dr. Donna Jackson, expert on US politics, history, and history at the University of Chester, regularly helps us with US affairs. You're not going to like this one, Doctor. Where does Trump go next? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think he will go wherever he wants to go. He is acting like a spoiled bully child, and you know, we just heard it said he has this enormous power, and he can use it, and he wants to use it. And I don't think he will be having any worries, because I think he lives in a little sort of his own self-contained bubble, and he has constructed this fake reality around him. And he won't see through it. And if somebody disagrees with him, he just calls them out and says they're wrong and how dare they. And he is like a spoiled child, except he's like a spoiled child with huge power. And that is why people are dying.
We were out and among voters and people getting gas in Oklahoma. You might have heard the report. And there were various lines that came out. We don't want Iran getting a nuclear deterrent. We don't want the Epstein files. We went to war because of the Epstein files, is what one consumer, one gas buyer said. Where are you on all of that, Doctor? What do you see as a justification or reason in the president's mind?
I think it was a distraction. I think it was the Epstein files. I think those voters are absolutely correct. Everybody has stopped talking about them because there is a bigger story now. So I think he did it as a distraction. Not saying that there are not problems with Iran, but it was never the threat that Trump made it out to be, and which some of his supporters still buy. They still buy his version of the story. But they're starting to question it. Joe Kent is coming out. MAGA people are starting to question it. So it is the, you know, the start of that. But he still has a loyal base. He still has his supporters who will believe what he said. But it's the others. They're the ones that are going to make the difference. It's interesting. There's been some special elections. Republicans are still holding seats, but their margin of victory is much smaller. So I think if we can hold on till the midterms in November, that will be a big test for Trump. And maybe then he will pay attention. But I don't think he will. I think he's so wrapped up in himself. He will not believe anything except what he wants to believe, and everything else is somebody else's fault.
Lastly,
you know, this war is not going well because NATO won't help, because we won't help, and we're right and he's wrong.
Lastly, you almost anticipated my final question, Doctor. Just explain, they're just around the corner, not quite this corner, they're around two corners, the significance of the midterms. Explain if you would, Doctor.
Okay, so elections in America happen every year, but the main ones are every 2 years. So they have a presidential election on a 4-year cycle. The midterms take place in November in the 2 years after the presidential election. Every member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election, so all 435 of them, and 1/3 of the Senate. So this could be a massive change in the political makeup. And Trump has actually said, if the Republicans don't do well in the midterms, he knows he'll be impeached. And for once, I agree with him, because I think he will be held to account for the things he has done that are clearly illegal, unconstitutional.
Doctor, we'll speak again. Thank you for your time. Dr. Donna Jackson, expert on US politics and history at the University of Chester. Let's get straight to your reactions on this. We are going to, of course, bring you an update on meningitis, but we've got to 8:17, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
5 new cases of meningitis have been confirmed in Kent, taking the total number to 20. A government minister has told Nick that a targeted vaccination programme is being rolled out for students in halls of residence in Kent. And the US military says it's used powerful bombs to target Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz overnight. LBC weather, sunshine for most, with the odd shower for parts of Scotland, a mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise is closed because of an accident between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are severe delays. There are also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise because of an accident that's now on the hard shoulder before junction 13 for Staines. There were long delays on the M1 southbound. There's one lane closed, vehicles broken down between junction 11 for Luton and junction 10 for Luton Airport. The A2 westbound is now blocked because of an accident between the Inn on the Lake in Shorn and tollgate services in Gravesend, so there are long delays. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield because of problems with the overhead wires, and southern services are suspended between Birkbeck and Beckenham Junction. That's because of a problem with the points.
This is LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
it? The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia. And I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Mustafa, you'll be the first caller. This is what you're saying on social media. Tony says, Trump's approval rating now in the US, 25%. He is despised worldwide. Alex in Enfield, it's not the files, it's the money with Trump. Always follow the money trial. He'll be getting rich from this. Well, I don't see how he could be, but certainly he's under pressure. Mustafa is in Alicante. Give us the view from Spain. Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks
Hello,
for
sir.
Having me.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just my point, my only point is the only way to loosen the state of Hormuz is basically for the USA to get out of there.
It's not a great line. I think what you're saying, I'm not being rude, but I think because it's a shocking line, the way to solve this is for the United States to get out of the Strait of Hormuz. Just to clarify, sir, is that it?
To get out of the area.
To get out, yes. I mean, look, yes, that would probably mean the oil would start flowing again, but you would be turning your back on certainly thousands of people who would be executed by the Iranian regime.
Yeah, I think that they have done enough damage. I think that Brussels would, it's time to withdraw.
No, but you seem to be ignoring. I'll just try one last time. I mean, they admit to murdering 5,000 of their own. Some people are saying it's more like 35,000. You're just going to allow that to continue?
No, I didn't say that. What I said is they have rattled them enough now.
But what makes you think? And by the way, I'm not supporting some of what the US has done, I hasten to add, but if they pull out now, they're just going to murder anyone who showed any degree of dissent.
I'm not so sure about that.
What makes you think otherwise?
Because they have been rattled. They've learned a big lesson.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'd love to debate that with you more, but it's not the greatest telephone line, and I've got to be aware of people who are in their car or in the house or trying to get the children out to school, or they'll be a little bit late at 8:23. So I will probably say, Mustafa, look forward to speaking with you again. I was going to ask what the view is from Spain. I think the line has gone completely now. So let's move on to other matters. We'll return to Donald Trump in just a moment and tell you about a new idea. This radio station, when we talk to you, is all about your opinions on what might be happening, whether it's overseas, of course, with Donald Trump and the global affairs down there, or UK legislation, trying to get a sense on where you are, whether, as we saw, part of UK legislation, of course, the assisted dying debate up in Scotland. Well, there's a new AI tool to try and gauge public opinion in real time and hopefully get people engaged, and possibly even start to hold their politicians to account. It's called House of the People, houseofthepeople.com. The founder, Charlie Jobson, joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Jobson. When did you get this idea and how did it come to you? Morning.
Morning. The idea probably came to me about a year or two ago, but it's only been in the last year or 8 months when I've been building it that the technological capabilities, political zeitgeist, everything coalesced to sort of make this the time that it was made.
Can I call you Charlie?
Yeah, please do.
Charlie, are you a political animal?
Political animal? I mean, I'm interested in politics. I'm not particularly apathetic about many issues. But the reason why I'm doing this is because the main thing that I care about is everyone having an equal voice in the laws that govern them. Because to me, that is what true democracy is.
How does House of the People work?
Essentially, the UK public can log on now to houseofthepeople.com, vote on any bill or law that's currently going through Parliament or has gone through Parliament since 2006. And from there, what we do, we display how the MPs voted and we compare the two scores. It's essentially a measure of, let's say, public will against parliamentary action.
Can you give me an example of where it would appear our politicians are out of step with what people are saying on House of the People?
Mm-hmm. So I don't want to overstep our mark just yet. We have about 80,000 votes, which is, you know, pretty crazy seeing that's about a week. But right now we have some pretty hefty democratic gaps on removal of the two-child benefits cap limit. We also have one as well on the assisted dying. Both of those, I think, over 90% democratic gap. So what that is essentially the public have a 10% support rating. Parliament have a 100% support rating. That would be a 90% democratic gap.
Can we talk a little bit about assisted dying? Because you're probably aware of where that went in Scotland
last night.
So tell me where House of the People, do I call them voters, subscribers, clients? What do we
Let's call them voters.
Voters.
Let's call them voters.
Where were House of the People voters say on that? And where were they on jury trials? David Lammy's rather controversial.
Okay, I've got it right up next to me. Courts and Tribunals Bill.
Yeah.
We've got a 99% opposition from House of the People so far, compared to a 60% support from the Commons.
Right.
Assisted dying, I'll just get for you now.
Go on.
And that is comparatively, when did that was the most recent one?
Well, don't worry too much. We can move. Yeah, we can move on. Where do you see this ending up, lastly?
I mean, I see this ending up as an integral part of the political structure of the UK and hopefully one day worldwide. I see it as an update for democracy. I think when you look at the current political system, how it functions, I don't think the lowering voting turnout is due to political apathy. I think it's due to an apathy with the system or disengagement with the system, which is understandable because people are not seeing how their voice is manifesting into any sort of impact. And that's what I hope to change with House of the People.
I read from the Sun newspaper, you're 24. Hopefully they've got your age right. How many of your fellows, I think you're a former student, how many of your fellow ex-students, how many people of your age are engaged or have any interest in politics? And could this change that, Charlie?
A lot of them are interested and engaged. If you look on social media, it's you know, there's so much political activity going on Instagram or X, you know, depending on where your political affiliation lies will probably depend on which social platform you use. The issue is that people are not turning out to vote because they don't see the point. Because what ends up happening is they vote in a party. That party MP follows the party whip consistently. So what you don't get a consistent vote or an impact onto the legislation of this country, which I think you should. Because it's technologically feasible now. That's the main point.
Houseofthepeople.com is what it's called. politicians should fearful of it or embrace it, lastly, Charlie?
I hope they embrace it. We've had a few MPs already follow us on the X account, HOTP official, which is fantastic. And if any of them are listening right now, which I'm sure they are, what I want to say is that this is not a tool to get rid of you. This is a tool to make your job a hell of a lot easier. You can have a direct line of communication with your constituents and direct data on where your constituents stand on a bill-by-bill basis, which has never been done before. You don't need to guess anymore. The data will be there.
Charlie Jobson, founder of House of the People, thanks for your input today. 8:28, we come back to global affairs, the problem in the Middle East. David's in South Woodford. David, good to have you on again. What does Trump do now?
Good morning, Nick. I think there's a feeling amongst MAGA, and MAGA's actually unraveling now.
We picked that up in Oklahoma, I think. Yes, there are some.
There's talk of Tulsi Gabbard, who's Joe Kent's boss and the head of the National Intelligence, that she may resign as well. But the issue is there's an impression that Trump gets played by foreign leaders. He's been played by
Netanyahu. Gets played by who? Sorry?
Foreign leaders.
Putin,
a few years, ago, the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, played him. And now Netanyahu has done the same and led him into a war. So that's the issue. There is this image that certain leaders can sort of whisper in his ear and get what they want.
And lastly, there's just too much ego, I imagine, involved with the president at the moment to ever consider, as I used the expression earlier, self-doubt. He just doesn't do self-doubt, does he?
No, he's got his own echo chamber and his own bubble with his own views.
David, good to hear from you again. We'll take more calls on that. Let's come back to the subject with which we started the show, which is concern, of course, even in the time that we've been on air, and I'm not trying to contribute to a national panic in any way, shape or form, but since we've been on air, the number of cases in the Kent meningitis outbreak has risen from 15 to 20. There's a baby that's being treated. There's reports that a case has been discovered in London and even cases in France. His government reaction, you'll hear something referred to as the JCVI. That's the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, addressed in the Commons yesterday by Health Secretary Wes Streeting.
We obviously follow the expert independent advice of the JCVI. In light of this latest outbreak, I will be asking them to re-examine eligibility for meningitis vaccines.
More on that after this. It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, on LBC. News time now, Dominic Ellis.
A government minister has told Nick that a targeted vaccination programme is being rolled out for students in Kent following a meningitis outbreak. The number of cases in the area increased overnight from 15 to 20. The United States has used some of its most powerful bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran's blockade of the shipping route has rattled international markets and caused oil prices to soar. And the Scottish Parliament has rejected plans to legalise assisted dying for terminally ill adults. MSPs voted against the bill by 69 votes to 57. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A very mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuits are good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
Georgie's up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Just coming up on 8:33, while in no way negating the importance of events in the US-Israel-Iran war, it is domestic events, I think, that are driving your concern as this worries now over meningitis. And as I say, again, without wishing to drive panic, I do think that the relevant agencies and the government are getting this about right, and you know that I'm always ready to pile in if I can. I think they're taking all the necessary measures, which includes hearing from the Health Secretary yesterday in the House of Commons West Streeting, talking about consulting the JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, on how that vaccine rollout could be widened.
Mr. Speaker, people are understandably asking about a vaccine. From 2015, the MenB vaccine has been available on the NHS as part of routine childhood immunisations, but clearly most students would not be vaccinated. Given the severity of the situation, I can confirm to the House that we will begin a targeted vaccination programme for students living in halls of residence at the University of Kent in Canterbury, which will begin in the coming days. UKHSA will provide further advice on other cohorts in the coming days. On the question of wider eligibility, we obviously follow the expert independent advice of the JCVI. In light of this latest outbreak, I will be asking them to re-examine eligibility for meningitis vaccines.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting now. In the first hour of the show, I spoke with Emma Wall, a clinical professor of infectious diseases at Queen Mary University of London. She gave advice on what to do if you think you might have the infection.
It's a huge concern for all parents nationally, I'm sure, and all students as well, that they could be exposed. The most important thing is to be aware of the signs and symptoms of meningitis. Make sure that you look out if you feel unwell in any way, that you think particularly disproportionately unwell to how you think you ought to be feeling in that situation, to seek urgent medical help, because we know that if someone's developing signs and symptoms, getting antibiotics in as early as possible is important. If you are notified as a contact of any case and offered antibiotics, definitely take them. The biggest risk at the moment is that students who have left the university campus because they're frightened and gone back home early without receiving their antibiotics to prevent contact, they're the people who are most at risk. And so if they're contacted by text or any form of electronic message, go to your GP, find a way to get those antibiotics to eliminate that risk of onward transmission.
So that's the professor. What are the politicians? Now, again, I say, without wishing to fuel any concern or panic, even the time we've been on air, the number has risen to 20, something I put to Cabinet Minister Nick Thomas-Symonds.
Nick, I just heard that figure of 20 just before I came on air. And of course, the government will be led by the clinical evidence. But just a few points I think it's important for your listeners. Firstly, there is a targeted vaccination programme now for the halls of residence at the University of Kent, Canterbury. Second, anyone who was at the chemistry club on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March should come forward for preventative antibiotics. And on the gov.uk website, there's a number of places, I think four places in total, where you can actually go and get the antibiotics. I just want to say a word as well, Nick, about symptoms. And again, they're on the gov.uk website. Things like a rash, fever, headaches. It's often said that it's almost like having a hangover, the type of symptoms here. And it's so important that if you have those symptoms, you are going forward for medical advice and attention.
Nick Thomas-Symonds, coming to you, Steve. Just a couple from the emails and the text. Dee says, my cousin died from meningitis after being told she had migraines. She passed away in Ibiza and she had to be brought home. Al in Manchester is having nothing of it. Here we go, and let's have a pandemic to take the focus off what the government is sneaking about doing. Steve in Woking. Your story, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, just my cousin. This is going back quite a way, about 40 plus years ago.
Yeah.
But she's a 15-year-old girl, was at school, was taken ill at school, was sent home, and there was a delay in getting her to hospital. She went to hospital. And
what were her symptoms? Just what were her symptoms? Why did they feel she needed to be hospitalised, Steve?
I'm not sure, Nick. It's a long time ago.
Okay.
I think she was just feeling generally really poorly. She went to hospital. She fell into a coma and was in a coma for, I think, 3-4 days.
Oh, good Lord.
And she had just been offered a position in the army as a physical education trainer.
Right.
Very fit young girl.
Yeah.
Woke up from a coma, came around from a coma after about 3 or 4 days and was completely deaf and completely blind.
Oh, my God.
As a 15-year-old girl who was very fit, absolute lovely girl.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she, after a few days, she did regain her sight, and her sight's fine. But she has always been and still is totally deaf.
And absolutely deaf. Can't be helped with a hearing aid in any fashion at all.
She does wear a hearing aid, but to be honest, it doesn't really make any difference. She can't hear anything. But she has made a fantastic fist of her life. I mean, she obviously couldn't join the army.
No.
She has made a fantastic fist. She trained as a chef, and she's now in charge of, she's in the care sector and has won numerous awards. But it's just to show how dangerous this condition is if it's not treated very, very quickly. Sorted out. Because
must be. Lastly, when you heard this on the news bulletins or you saw it in the headlines, it must have brought a chill to you as you were reminded of your cousin all those years ago.
Well, yeah, but not so much me, it's her. Because,
Steve, thank you for telling. Please do give her our best wishes. And fantastic that the woman. Well, she's still a young woman to me. The young woman powered on and has put her life together. Steve, thank you. Coming up on 8:40, Karen in Welwyn Garden City. Karen, now we're talking about your baby at some point. Is that right? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Yes, my baby was about 4.5 months old. She was really unsettled, crying a lot. Her temperature kind of kept spiking. For a couple of days, I just couldn't console her, so ended up taking her to A&E. We were admitted very quickly. They did a series of tests. They knew she was extremely unwell. Mm-hmm. Her CRP, which the infection marker, was over sort of 200 and creeping up and up. We were in hospital quite some time, about 10 days, while they sort of tried to figure out the cause of the bacterial infection, because they needed the right antibiotics in order to treat the right bacteria. So my local hospital were in communications with Great Ormond Street, and they kept changing the antibiotics. Mm-hmm. She was getting more and more poorly. On about day 9, they did a routine MRI scan of her brain to check for any sort of signs of brain damage from the meningitis. They couldn't see anything. Everything was fine, but they did see something in the top of her neck. So they scheduled her in for another MRI of her spine, and they found out that her whole spinal cord was full of infection, infectious fluid. Because there was so much of it, had nowhere to go. It actually seeped into her lung cavity and collapsed her lung.
Oh, my goodness.
We were blue-lighted up to Great Ormond Street. She was in surgery the next morning, where they sort of opened up her back and had to drain all the infectious fluid from her. She was fitted with a PICC line so that she could have IVM.
Sorry, what's a PICC line?
It's a line directly into her heart so they can administer IV antibiotics.
I see.
So she was on a whole cocktail of antibiotics still. And that
and
kind
still
of
just
that
4.5 months old, poor little thing.
Yes, yeah. Grief. And we were on the antibiotics. We were in hospital a while, obviously, while she recovered. She was on the antibiotics for months. Mm. They took her off it. She was well for 2 weeks. And then it happened all over again.
What, 3 months later?
Yes. So she was only off the antibiotics 2 months. And then started getting poorly again. The infection was back. She had to go back up to Great Ormond Street for more surgery, where they actually found a tunnel in her skin. So she had, apparently, when babies are forming, when the cells split that make the spine, it also makes the skin, and sometimes it leaves this little tunnel. So basically, bacteria was getting in via this tunnel and causing the infection in her spine.
What did the surgeons do?
So they removed the tunnel. They cut that out during that surgery. Unfortunately, they also found a benign tumour on her spine during that surgery at the same time.
She's still just 7.5 months when all this is going on.
She's still really tiny. So she was fitted back with a PICC line for more months of antibiotics until she got better so that she could go back in and have a third surgery to remove the tumour from her spine.
How old was she when she had her third surgery?
She was nearly one.
So before she was 12 months old, this little one had been through all that?
Yes, yeah, 3 surgeries. She's got quite a big scar on her back.
You mentioned her CRP was 200. This is a protein check, isn't it, the CRP?
Yeah.
What's it meant to? Do you happen to know off the top of your head what it's meant to be? But you say 200.
Sub-5, sub-10, almost
you're meant
zero,
to be below
it's supposed to be.
10 or 5, yeah. And your daughter was at 200.
At one point, I think she got up to 280.
So she had a meningitis of short forms, then, did she?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, so meningitis B, so it was a bacterial infection.
How long ago was this? How old is she now?
So she's 2.5 now. So, yeah, she's doing well. She, unfortunately, she can't empty her bladder by herself following the removal of the tumour, but it's not a problem. We get on with life and she's happy and she's great. She's enjoying nursery and she's fabulous now. But, yeah, it was, and a big shout out to Great Ormond Street and all that they did for her, and the nurses and staff there are just incredible.
Okay. And so her, she can have a normal life. I mean, we've hearing from other people who are blind and deaf and whatever it might be.
Yeah, she can. She can. Well, she will have to, you know, she has to be catheterised in order to empty her bladder.
And that will be for the rest of her days, will it?
Yes, it will.
But think where you got from where you were at times. You almost thought you were going to lose her, didn't you?
Well, she was literally hours from, not being with us. Yeah.
She must be incredibly special to you. Karen, thank you for telling the story. Do please give her our best wishes, and I'm sure a very lively 2.5-year-old racing around, as all 2.5 should do. Karen, thank you. Let's do some more of that's come in on social media. Lucinda says, I have twin sons at two different universities, both in their final year. I booked two jabs for Men B by 10 a.m. yesterday, made arrangements for one boy to come home so I could drive him to his vaccine today, then take him back to uni. Despite booking an appointment online and paying, I received a call yesterday afternoon saying the appointment could not go ahead as they've no stock. Their IT system had not allowed me to place an order. I would have secured a jab with another provider who allocated stock as it's ordered and paid for. I chose the provider I ordered with due to their trusted reputation. I'm now a whole day behind. Now, I don't want to add to panic, but I will continue. And the other provider has now run out of stock and I can't find it anyway. They're telling me it's a national shortage. I'm telling them their system should not have taken the order. Well, I can understand your concern. Darren says, my firstborn took ill in our small highland village called Brora. I hope I'm saying that correctly. The nearest big hospital was 65 miles south to Inverness. We went to a small community hospital. We got to see a young on-call doctor whom, within 5 minutes, gave our child an injection and organised an ambulance. He was blue-lit down to Inverness. He made a full recovery, and I was later told if the doctor in the community hospital hadn't done what she'd done, the outcome would have been different. He's now a healthy 18-year-old. Look after him, I'm sure you will. More on that to come. Plus, in the next hour, the shocking figure, 1 in 10 working-age Britons are on some form of disability benefits, with 1,000 being signed off a day. The relevant Government Minister, Work and Pension Secretary, Matt Fadden, addressed this earlier in the week.
The best form of welfare reform is opportunity and work. Not just a welfare state, but a working state.
And that's what he told me, and we'll go back to that in the next hour. It's 8:45 now. LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen from 15 to 20 as a targeted vaccination programme rolls out for students in the area. The United States has used some of its most powerful bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. And the Scottish Government says it's committed to ensuring access to end-of-life care after Holyrood rejected a bill to legalise assisted dying. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise stays closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are severe delays. Also on the M25 clockwise, there are queues because of an accident at junction 14 for Heathrow, so one lane is closed. There were long delays on the M1 southbound after a car broke down earlier before junction 10 for Luton Airport, so all the lanes are back open there. There are long delays on the A2 westbound. It's still partly blocked because of an accident between the Inn on the Lake at Shorne and Cobham services at Graves End. There are queues embarking on the A13 going out of town. There's one lane closed because of an accident at the Lodge Avenue flyover. And on the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield because of problems with the overhead wires.
LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Frustrating is printing a recipe where the quality fades with every ingredient. Smart is a printer that delivers high-quality ink over time. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP Smart Tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP Smart Tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll come back to meningitis, the conversation, in just a moment. Some really moving personal stories, either for yourself or loved ones. Just coming up 10 minutes before 9. And to other matters, well, two events taking place today in something called an Opposition Day debate, and how it will be used by the Conservatives. Particularly, you know, we have our fuel trackers who ring us in twice a week. And since this crisis started, and we cover London and we cover the South West, we're in Scotland and we're in the North East, and every which way you look, prices of unleaded and diesel are only going one way. And as for heating oil, my goodness, well, the Conservatives want to get at that. And here to explain with more details is a Conservative MP in Essex. There are a few left. And Shadow Transport Secretary Richard Holden, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Holden. What is it that you and your colleagues will be looking to do today? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, what we want to do is get the government to think again about these fuel duty rises that they're trying to phase in, basically. 5p a litre, 6p if you include VAT, because we all forget that VAT is added on top of fuel duty at the pump as well. And at the moment, the government's proposing that in September there'll be a penny increase, in December there'll be a 2p increase, and then in March there'll be another 2p increase. And this is on the back of Conservatives having cut fuel duty in government and frozen it for our time in office from 2011 as well. So I think, particularly at the moment, when we're seeing these prices spiking right across the country and the world, in fairness, because of the oil prices and the war in the Middle East, we want to see the government think again about this, particularly when this cash is going to be going, you know, this isn't going to, you know, the roads or anything, this is going to just to pay for more welfare. And that's the other thing behind it. We want the government to get control of spending, and that's, we think, this priority rather than tax rises.
Well, the government would say this is worth somewhere in the region of £2 to £3 billion, Mr. Holden. Where are they meant to make that shortfall up from?
Well, we saw actually a few months ago Keir Starmer, not being basically forced on the back foot over those welfare changes that he proposed. And he was only proposing to try and stop the increase in welfare spending from being as high as it could have been. We're saying, have a look across the board. There are other places you could find the money from, particularly, we think, concentrating on welfare. We don't think you should be raising taxes on the family car, on the person who needs their van to go to work, or on literally everybody's shop, because actually food has to be delivered to shops right across the country. And so this is going to be inflationary, push right through, cause increases in cost of even on the government debt, all the way through to inflationary increases in the high street. And we think it's exactly the wrong time to do it. So we're asking the government to think again and instead look at other places it could find the money.
Mr. Holden, we're about to discuss something you just touched on. One in ten working-age Britons are on some form of disability benefit. 1,000 successful claims a day. Hundreds being given benefits to this. A word on a situation that would seem, from where I'm sitting, to be virtually out of control.
It does feel out of control at the moment. Between 2010 and the start of the pandemic, actually, we really clamped down on welfare. During the pandemic, we had to release some of the strictures. For example, you couldn't have in-person checks. We're saying the government should return to in-person checks, and they should have done it a long time ago, in order to try and get some of these welfare bills down. It's so important now that people see welfare being controlled, because taxes are going up across the board, and we're seeing young people, unemployment particularly, skyrocketing. Actually, what young people want is jobs, but we can only do that if employers are able to pay them and not tax the hilt for doing so. So we need to see taxes controlled and welfare controlled. That's what we're planning. That's what we've said. The government should look at £47 billion of the spending cuts. £23 billion of it should come from welfare. And that's where our concentration needs to be now. More tax rises like this on fuel duty is exactly the wrong way to go, when the country's already seeing growth of 0%. That's exactly the wrong way to go.
Lastly, can you provide clarity on another matter? There seems to be confusion over exactly where Kemi Badenoch, your party leader, stands on the level of support that should have been provided to Donald Trump at the start of the US and Israel war, and where we find ourselves now. Can you lay it on the line? Where was Mrs. Badenoch on this? Mr. Holden.
I'll be very clear with you, Nick. From the start, we said that the government should have allowed the US to use British bases, and we've been consistent in that position all the way through. Sir Keir Starmer tried to get that same position, weirdly, through his cabinet. They would not allow him to have that position, so he had to say no to that position initially, and then only later has allowed that to be the case. And he's the one who says that Ms. Badenoch's changed position. That's totally untrue. It's Sir Keir Starmer who doesn't have the spine to even stand up to his own cabinet to get his position through. Kemi's been very clear. And actually, she's also, in fairness to her, she stood up to say, you know, we don't want name-calling from the President of the US about the British Prime Minister either. But the British Prime Minister needs to be clear about what he wants to do and his position, rather than trying to obfuscate.
And just to clarify, Mrs. Badenoch would support deployment of Royal Navy vessels in the Strait of Hormuz?
We'll have to see. That's a different position at the moment. We'll have to see exactly what's required and what vessels are required and when. Okay. But we want to see those shipping lanes kept open.
Richard Holden, a Shadow Transport Secretary, Conservative MP, using that Opposition Day debate over what will ultimately be a 5p increase initially, and admittedly 1p the first one, but then by the time you add it all up. We might return to that. Certainly we're returning to the benefits debate, and calls are coming in already on that. But I want to bring Sophia in Guildford into the conversation about meningitis, because I understand you're an ambassador for a charity. Is that correct? Sophia, good morning to you.
Yeah. Hi, Nick. I'm community ambassador for Meningitis Now.
Okay.
I actually met you quite a few years ago.
Ah.
I lost both legs from meningitis when I was 16. Yeah.
Oh, just sorry, remind me where we met, Sophia. I'm so sorry.
It was, no problem. It was for the Best magazine, and I was getting some inspirational Person of the Year.
I remember that. Yes,
yeah,
that would be a few years ago now.
It was a long time ago. It was Eamon Holmes, and
yes.
I had...
We had
the Nolan sisters on the table. It was amazing.
I think we were down at Croydon, weren't we?
That was it.
A few years ago now. So tell me, you are an ambassador. Tell me what exactly you try and do as a community ambassador.
So it's basically this, sharing my story, just raising awareness. I've got a real passion, because I was 16, I've got a real passion about making sure that parents know exactly what to look for. But the one thing that we don't do as parents of teenagers, and also when kids go to university, is especially now, I was ill, you know, a long time ago, and things are different now, but everybody checks in on the phone, but we don't actually go and see someone, and we don't actually check their bodies. Like, you wouldn't ever dream of taking a duvet cover off a teenager and actually checking their body for any rashes.
Right.
I've got two kids now, and they're teens.
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever they're ill, the first thing I do is, you know, check all of their feet. The rash appears, I lost both my legs, because what people, I think, I'm reading lots on social media, and there's lots of misinformation going about, but you have to remember that the bacteria that we're talking about, yes, it affects the lining of the brain, but it causes sepsis.
Yes.
And it's the sepsis that is killing people. It's the sepsis that causes all of the limb loss and the blood poisoning.
Yes.
It's the sepsis that's affecting all of the organs. And you've got to remember, you've got to kind of research meningitis, but also research the symptoms of sepsis and know what you're looking for. But it's that rash, the non-branching rash, although that being said, I didn't have pinprick rashing, I had big bruises.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I got ill at New Year's Eve and I was 16 and, you know, all these cues going to get antibiotics, the same thing happened to me here in Guildford.
Right.
Because I'd gone round kissing lots of boys on New Year's Eve.
Well,
so
all
the doctor surgeries were, yeah, full up. Very embarrassing.
Don't be so silly. You're happy now. You've got your two lovely children or whatever it might be. As the work you do for meningitis now.
Yeah.
Of course, the gravity and the severity of this is really, really dramatic. But for raising awareness, Sophia, is that a positive that we should take from what we're witnessing
in
Kent?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I also don't think everyone needs to go and panic buy. I mean, it's really important. The vaccine works. And there's data, it shows that when people were vaccinated and we got it all out there. But I've been campaigning for the vaccine for 30-odd years.
Yes.
But the key with this is that vaccine needs three doses for it to be effective. So anyone queuing up now is they're not going to be cleared and safe from it right now, because it's going to take three doses for you to be immune.
I have to leave it there, Sophia. Thank you. Great to hear from you again. I do remember, gosh, it was quite a few years ago, wasn't it? You stay in touch, particularly the work you do for meningitis now, so no problems if you want to call me. I mean, hopefully this is done and dealt with soon, but if not, stay in touch. Best wishes to your family. Good to hear you again. We will, of course, stay with this, but coming up after the news, here's Work and Pensions Secretary Pat McFadden saying too many people are out of work and how he plans to put it right.
By a system that doesn't give them enough opportunity and too readily funnels them down a path labelled unfit for work.
I've no doubt he's doing his best, but the latest figures are certainly knocking him and his colleagues back, and we'll give you more details on that. We will, of course, stay with that meningitis story. And Labour is running out of time to get things done. Who says that? Well, that would be Angela Rayner, which is a little bit of red faces for Labour. Those stories are more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, health officials say the number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen from 15 to 20. Two people have died since the outbreak was first reported on Saturday. A vaccination programme is now being rolled out to students in halls of residence at the university. Government Minister Nick Thomas-Summons has told Nick this morning officials are proactively managing the outbreak.
West Reading has asked the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, indeed working with the UK Health Security Agency, as to whether, of course, we need to look again at this and extend it. And one of the issues on vaccination is we have been vaccinating babies on Men B since 2015. Mm. But of course, if you're older than that, and that is the cohort and generation that will obviously be now at university, then they will not have had that vaccination.
GPs across the country are being advised to prescribe antibiotics to anyone who visited Club Chemistry in Canterbury between March the 5th and March the 7th. Speaking to Nick earlier, Professor of Infectious Diseases Emma Wall had this advice.
If you are notified as a contact of any case and offered antibiotics, definitely take them. The biggest risk at the moment is that students who have left the university campus because they're frightened and gone back home early without receiving their antibiotics to prevent contact, they're the people who are most at risk. And so if they're contacted by text or any form of electronic message, go to your GP, find a way to get those antibiotics to eliminate that risk of onward transmission.
The United States has used so-called bunker buster bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Military officials say the targets housed weapons that posed a risk to international shipping. Iran's blockade of the shipping routes has caused oil prices to soar in recent days. The Scottish Government says it's committed to ensuring access to end-of-life care after Holyrood rejected a bill to legalise assisted dying. The proposal would have allowed mentally competent adults with less than 6 months to live to seek help to end their lives. Angela Rayner has warned that Labour risks a breach of trust with voters over plans to make it harder for migrants to stay in the UK. The former Deputy Prime Minister has described proposals as un-British. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has previously said that change is needed to avoid a drain on public finances. And owners of dogs at Harris Livestock will face unlimited fines and could have their pets taken away under new laws for England and Wales. Campaigners hope the new rules coming into force today will better protect farm animals. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 10 points at 10,413. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A very mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Breakups, that's a tricky one. That's why EE is the only major provider to give you up to £300 to switch. You'll get full fibre, but you'll also get EE's most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard, so the whole house can do more, like streaming that series whilst your work calls stay crystal clear. Switch to EE today.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New BT Group customers only. 62% availability terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine on Wednesday, the 18th of March. Britain isn't working, and it's official. 1 in 10 working-age Britons are on disability benefit. The budget for that particular area is soaring, and the number of people who are being signed off grows daily. This crackdown isn't working, and neither is the country. We'll look at that in more detail. Talking of things that apparently aren't working...
My government will fight every day until you believe again, guided only by the determination to serve your interests.
Sir Keir Starmer giving his first speech as Prime Minister. We took you back to Downing Street, July 2024. But now, Labour is, quote, running out of time. Who says so? Well, that would be his former deputy, Angela Rayner. I'll be asking you, is she right? Plus, we'll come back, of course, to that conversation about meningitis. It would appear the government and the relevant security, health security agencies are moving fast enough, but we'll continue that conversation.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Doesn't matter which headline you choose, they're certainly very concerning. 1 in 10 working-age adults are on the main disability benefit in England and Wales, the latest figure has shown. It takes the figure now to some 3.93 million people, should we say 4 million people, claiming PIP in January. That's up 6% from a year earlier. The number of claimants almost doubled since comparable figures were first kept by the Department for Work and Pensions. As recently as 2019, hundreds being signed off each day. Now, the government have talked about doing something about this. You may recall they talked about the idea of a welfare benefit reform early summer. And they were, in the eyes of some commentators, bullied into submission over that. It's worth telling you that the total bill, when you come to this, currently, is in the region of 200 and something billion pounds, which is greater. Now, that does include state pensions, I hasten to add. So I don't want everybody to think, we're giving that much money in benefit. No, that includes state pension. And of course, you have to get older and older. Did you see the story earlier this week? Primary school children could have to work until their mid-70s before the state pension kicks in. I mean, poor little souls. Mid-70s. I mean, I can share with you, I didn't get my pension when I was supposed to get it, because rather than address the triple lock, I think in some instances they just keep putting the age back. That's one way of saving money. But the idea that some poor little soul at school now, age 5, is going to be 75 seems ridiculous. But let's come back to where we find ourselves now. Speaking with me earlier this week, I challenged Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden, what is he going to do about it?
The difference is that we're now doing something about it. I want to give young people hope. I want to give them opportunity. I'm often asked on shows like this, what are you going to do about welfare reform? Well, let me tell you, the best form of welfare reform is opportunity and work. Not just a welfare state, but a working state.
Dr. Shani Danda is an accessibility consultant and disability activist. Do you agree with what we heard from the government minister, indeed Secretary of State there? Morning, Doctor.
Morning. No, I feel like the government are saying one thing and doing another. And also, none of this happened in a vacuum. You know, the rising claims follows 14 years of policy choices. It's austerity. If you're going to cut and dismantle support systems for over a decade, of course more people will experience higher rates of disability and will become too unwell to work. And what I'm talking about is...
Some have just come out of school, Doctor.
Sorry, say that again?
Some of these youngsters, they've just come out of school straight onto benefits, disability benefits.
Yeah.
How can that be 14 years of whatever you hear, cuts or whatever? They were in sixth form.
Well, NHS backlogs, if people are experiencing illness and they can't get access to healthcare, it doesn't matter what age you are, it's still going to affect you. We've also got things like long-term illness post-COVID, massive increase in mental health. You know, rising claims are a sign of rising illness, not fraud.
An 18-year-old who comes out of school or possibly college and goes and signs up, they've got all of the above, post-COVID.
No, I didn't say that.
Right. Okay, so what explains it then? Is it not, in some instances, not all, that the system is just too easy?
No, I don't think so. And I think if you speak to anybody that has been through it, they will talk about how dehumanising it is and actually how it only focuses on the things that you can't do and less about the support that if you do get some support, the things that you can do. Let's not forget that while this is all happening, the current government are actively pushing disabled people out of work. So on one hand, how can they say they want more disabled people in work, but they're cutting a support scheme called Access to Work that has pushed thousands of people, disabled people out of work?
But why would there be an additional 233,080 claimants 12 months on? They've all been pushed out of work, have they?
No, that's not the case. And when we talk about PIP, PIP isn't means tested. So you can be in work and you can receive PIP because PIP isn't anything to do with unemployment. PIP is a benefit to help offset the unavoidable extra costs you face as a disabled person. So we should really clear that up because I think a lot of people get that confused. But there's lots of reasons. A lot of these benefits actually do go unclaimed. They are difficult to get. You have to you really have to go through rigorous processes.
I'm aware you have to leave me in a minute, but I'll just put this final point to you, Doctor, if I may. They're difficult to get, and yet, since its introduction in April 2013, more than 4.5 million have successfully claimed. That's the equivalent of 1,000 every working day.
Well, we've got over 16 million. No, well, it is. We've got over 16 million disabled people. And if only 4 million are claiming, and obviously not everyone's going to need to claim that, but it's still a significant low number if we're really going to talk about it in that context.
I know you have to go. Thank you for your time. Dr. Shani Dander is an accessibility consultant and disability activist. Listening to that, Annabel Denham, who's a columnist and senior political commentator at The Telegraph. Annabel, you'll recall better than I, they were going to try and address this around June or July of last year, and it came to naught. What chance do you give Pat McFadden with his latest attempts? Good morning, Annabel.
Good morning. I'm afraid very slim to non-existent. I wish Pat McFadden all the best, but I think I have more chance of winning Wimbledon than he does, slashing our benefits bill. They will simply never get reform past the backbenches. Labour MPs last summer were insisting they did not come into politics in order to cut benefits for people who they conceive to be the most vulnerable, and that sentiment remains today. So, even with the best of intentions, I don't see this going anywhere. Now, look, there are things that Pat McFadden could be doing to boost youth unemployment in particular, such as not bringing the minimum wage in line with those over the age of 21, obviously cutting employers' national insurance that Rachel Reeves raised by £25 billion in the October 2024 budget, really trying to incentivise job creation and incentivise bosses to take a risk on young people who've just left school and university, and that could really help. But in terms of actually cutting the welfare bill, which is going to exceed £400 billion by the end of this decade, including pensions, as you've pointed out, is just for the birds.
Listen, obviously we're focusing on Pat McFadden and the current government. Is any blame to be laid at the door of 14 years of Conservative-led administration, Annabel?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, your previous guest, Shani, was talking about policy choices. Well, look, we created a system which no longer provides a cushion for the most vulnerable in society. When PIP was brought in 2013, it provided a more generous benefit than out-of-work benefits. Now, I'm afraid to say that did create quite a strong incentive for people to claim that they were too sick to work rather than just solely being on the dole and looking for employment. So, no, I think the Conservatives have got a lot to answer for here in terms of the system that we're now living with. I would just commend Mel Stride, who towards the last days of the previous Conservative government did start to talk about mental health. He stuck his head above the parapet and he warned that we were conflating the normal emotions that go accompany life with serious mental health illness. And, you know, in so doing, he has slightly shifted sort of the open window and widened the field of acceptable speech. We do need to address the fact that around 35 to 40% of PIP claims are for mental or behavioural issues.
Lastly, grass or clay, if you talk about which are you stronger on, Annabelle?
I think neither. I think I might go hardcore.
Annabelle Denham, thank you. Columnist, senior political commentator at The Telegraph. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Chris in Kingston. Chris, your reaction to these figures that have been published yesterday. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good to speak with you again. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not bad at all. Yeah.
Jolly good. I was listening to the things that people have been saying about PIP. And as I was saying to your producer, I worked for 43 years, 44 years, something like that. I had a fall at a station and fell the entire length of an escalator.
Oh, Christ.
Hit my head at the end of it. And I'm now blind.
Oh.
And I have to use a wheelchair.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
And it's all right, mate. Don't worry. It took me 10 months from initial application to be able to actually get a PIP assessment.
This is extraordinary. And yet the figures would seem to say that it's a bit like ordering a pizza. You just ask when you want it and they come round.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of politicians don't seem to understand what's happening. And a lot of members of the public don't either. It's not easy to get it. And
do you have it now, Chris?
I have got PIP now, yes. I was awarded this at the beginning of the month. But, it's taken me 10 months just to be able to get some help. So I can categorically say that it is not an easy thing that you can just walk into and get.
Really appreciate the call. You look after yourself. I remember speaking with you before. And I'm so grateful you put in that call because these headlines tell it the other way. Notwithstanding, if you look at it, why would it take someone as valid as Chris 10 months and yet it would appear, others not? You might have more details on that. Also, well, Britons aren't working. Some would suggest Labour's not working or indeed running out of time. That's the view of, well, that would be the former deputy leader, Angela Rayner. Do you concur? We'll give you the details on that in a minute. It's 9:15, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen from 15 to 20 as a targeted vaccination programme rolls out for students in the area. The United States has used some of its most powerful bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. And the Scottish Government says it's committed to ensuring access to end-of-life care after Holyrood rejected a bill to legalise assisted dying. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are severe delays. On the M25 clockwise, there are also queues after a medical emergency earlier after junction 9 for Leatherhead, so all the lanes are back open there. There are also queues on the M25 clockwise to junction 14 for Heathrow after an accident earlier. There are long delays on the A2 westbound. Traffic has been held. That's because of an accident between the Inn on the Lake in Shorne and tollgate services in Gravesend. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield because of some problems with the overhead wires. And on the tube, there are severe delays on the entire Jubilee line. That's because of cancellations.
This is LBC.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia. And I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognize my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
And as I was talking with Chris about, to me, his totally valid claim for a pip, this comes in from someone who says, please don't give their name. The system is too easy. I have ADHD. I could claim for PIP even though I'm in full-time work. I don't, because I don't think it's right to claim money when I don't need it, but I know people who work and have their PIPs and they don't need them. They didn't even need a face-to-face appointment. They watch YouTube videos that give them tips on what to say. All of them have a disability, but not one that impacts their life to the extent they need additional funds. These loopholes, like the ones for tax avoidance, need to be closed. And there we are. One caller that says that, and one, what was that, texter, who says the other. Paul is in Belfast. Paul, your take on this. Good morning.
How are you doing, Nick?
Good, sir. Want to hear your take, your view on this.
I mean, look, I'm just amazed still at the level of misinformation and ignorance around PIP. I mean, that text you just wrote, you just mentioned there.
Yes.
It's absolute and total nonsense.
Is it?
It's absolute and total nonsense.
Tell me
now,
why.
I'm employed, but I'm a tribunal representative here in Belfast.
Tribunals, what? Disability tribunals.
Disability tribunals,
yeah, okay,
or
yeah.
Disability benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, PIP is notoriously difficult to get. No matter what your taxers are saying, I'm telling you, the system is stacked against the claimant. The system's stacked against the claimant. The one other thing I want to point out, Nick, as well.
But if that's the case, sir, and you're closer to I, since it was introduced 13 years ago, almost to the day, actually, there have been 4.5 million, which equates to 1,000 every working day. If it's so difficult, how come that level?
Well, look, what I can tell you about PIP, when I say it's notoriously difficult to get, it is notoriously difficult to get. It depends on your disability or your long-term illness.
Mm.
People equating PIP, mixing in the world of employment with PIP, is absolutely wrong. It's got nothing to do with the world of work. It's a medical benefit. It's a medical benefit. It's an amount of money the government to support this person because of their disability or long-term illness. Absolutely nowhere in the Social Security regulations is the word employment or work mentioned. It's got nothing to do with the world of work.
Can I ask you this? The last tribunal you acted on or acted for, please don't give anyone's name,
sure,
but can you just give us the basic thrust of what they were claiming, what the response was, and how you helped with the adjudication?
Well, this person was involved in a road traffic accident over a year ago and had been turned down twice. Now, my own professional opinion was that they were poorly represented before.
But what were the impacts? Had she lost? Was she in a wheelchair now? Had she lost a limb? Had she been lost a sight? What was?
Well, this person's mobility has been severely impacted on in her left leg.
Yeah,
she's a walking aid now.
Right.
It was a life altering accident. So this person, I was last Tuesday to be 100% on the ball.
Right.
We went to their tribunal last Tuesday. The claimant won and was back paid and subsequently received at a higher rate of the mobility component.
Right, okay. And that will provide for her to have some quality of life again, hopefully.
Well, I mean, that's not going to alter this person's injuries in any way, shape or form.
No, but it'll assist her in trying to live a life, obviously, the enhanced money will.
The extra amount of money, you know, that should help. That should help. If she wants to access a vehicle or a motorized aid, she's free now to do that. But it's just the level of misinformation and ignorance about the system. People equating access to PIP as somehow connected to the world of work.
I mean, lastly, as someone points out, Andy's just texted, surely the gentleman you're speaking with only sees the contested cases, not the ones that are just pushed through, no questions asked. Is that a fair criticism from Andy there on a text, do you think, Paul?
Well, look, I mean, people come to me when it's been exhausted.
Right.
People are at my office.
So obviously they don't come exhausted. To you when it's been... The point he's making, which is a valid one, they don't come to you when they've been successful, of course.
Oh, people come to me to have their... To receive assistance with completing the forms correctly.
Okay. All right. I'm really grateful for your input, particularly as you are a tribunal representative in the case you cited from last week. And we'll return to this conversation in a moment. Now, many people saying Britons aren't working. Some people saying the government isn't working. Angela Rayner, yes, remember her, former deputy leader, has said Labour is, and I quote, running out of time, close quotes. It's her strongest criticism of Sir Keir to date, her former deputy urging him to change direction or face defeat at the ballot box. Her party had become to resemble, quotes, the establishment. She denounced the government's migration reforms as, quotes, un-British. Her speech was to mainstream, a soft left pressure group, close to Andy Burnham, who, of course, is not keen supporter of Sir Keir. But what of this idea? Labour running out of time? Well, I remind you, here's a little of what Sir Keir Starmer told us. I take you back to those days, July 2024, outside number 10.
My government will fight every day until you believe again. From now on, you have a government unburdened by doctrine, guided only by the determination to serve your interest, to defy quietly those who have written our country off.
Nudging 2 years on, how's he doing? Scarlett Maguire, political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party, joins me now. Running out of time or getting there perhaps with baby steps or giant strides? Scarlett, morning. What is it? Which is it?
Good morning.
Which is it?
I think even Keir's been saying that he's got to do it. He won on a manifesto saying change. And change is what he's got to do. And that's what we all know. I don't think Angela Rayner is saying anything new. And I think there's an enormous push that he's got to change and he's got to show what a Labour government is about. And part of the problem is actually there's an awful lot of things that have gone through. There are a lot of things that are going to make an enormous difference to people. I mean, you know, if we just look at education, I mean, it once it's delivered, it would be transformative for children, which is very, very important. But there's very little publicity. I mean, you know, there is a problem that when things happen, the communications aren't very good either.
How is that to be put right?
Okay, so I think what is being put right is there is a new broom in number 10, and it is a new broom that is determined to change things, and it's changed things that people aren't going to notice, like the way Keir Starmer gets on with his MPs, right? That actually there's much more listening and much less of a bunker mentality, which is what had been going on, is we know best and we're not going to listen to you troublesome MPs. And now they realise that actually the thing about the MPs is they listen because they have to all the people. So there is change coming, and what's interesting is the change one of the most important things that's happening at the moment is Keir Starmer's stance on the war in Iran. And that actually, that isn't about change. That is because he believes that you only should be fighting legal wars. He was against Iraq, and he's come out and refused to help the Americans prosecute a war that is, as they say, is a war of choice. Is if the Americans had been attacked in America, he would have obviously sent, we would have done everything to defend them. But actually, NATO and Britain is about defending. It's not about attacking.
To those who say, lastly, Scarlett, they didn't have enough of a plan when they came in, and if they did, they didn't communicate it particularly well, and they failed to execute it at the same level. Again, how fair is that criticism?
I think it was down to individuals. I mean, I think if you look at Bridget Phillipson and Ed Miliband, they knew exactly what they wanted to do when they came in. I think the biggest problem was poor old Liz Kendall, who had not had her time. I mean, she wasn't shadow pensions,
no.
Work and pensions secretary. She was pushed into the job and then had to deal with it, and then had Rachel Reeves saying, you know, you've got to save money, you've got to save money, instead of we have to reform welfare, which is exactly what Pat McFadden is doing. So, yes.
But is he reforming, Scarlett? Is he reforming? Because they tried last June or July, and they were beaten back by their own party, weren't they?
No, because the problem about last June and July was two things. One is they didn't listen to their MPs who said this isn't reform. This is about saving money. What we have to do is we have to reform the welfare system so that people don't get stuck in it. It's really, really important. And if you look at what's going on, there's an awful lot, particularly to move young people into work out of the welfare system. If a young person is unemployed for a year, you know, it's very, very difficult to get them out. We do not want people in the welfare system who are perfectly capable of working. We don't want them in there for life. It's not good for us, and it's really, really not good for them. And that's what reforming the welfare system is about. It's not about, can I save a few million here? Can I save a few billion there? It's about, how do we do it so that actually we're incentivizing people to go out to work? And we're making sure that work pays, but we're guaranteeing to young people that if they've been unemployed, they will get a job, right? Okay. And that's what's really, really important.
Grateful as ever for your time. Have a good day. Thanks, Scarlett. Scarlett McGuire, political commentator, former communications advisor to the Labour Party. Come back to our conversation about benefits. Matt, sorry, you will be the caller. I know you've been hanging on for some time. We'll also come back to what we were saying from the first. This is indeed the first story we covered this morning, which is the number of meningitis cases following the Kent outbreak addressed in the House of Commons by Health Secretary Wes Streeting.
We obviously follow the expert independent advice of the JCVI. In light of this latest outbreak, I will be asking them to re-examine eligibility for meningitis vaccines.
That's the Joint Committee on Vaccines and Immunisation. Remember, that vaccine only kicked in from 2015, so this cohort is not currently protected. We'll get back to that. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
Health officials say the number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen overnight from 15 to 20. A targeted vaccination programme is now being rolled out to students in halls of residence at the university. The United States has used so-called buster bunker bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran's blockade of the key shipping route has caused oil prices to soar. And the Scottish Government says it is committed to ensuring access to end-of-life care after Holyrood rejected a bill to legalise assisted dying. The proposal would have allowed mentally competent adults with less than 6 months to live to seek help to end their lives. LBC weather, sunshine for most with the odd shower for parts of Scotland. A mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
So, you're geared up for this making tax digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, making tax digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Get back to meningitis in a moment. Details there. More details of what the government is putting into position. Remember, desperate now at a race to trace these students. Many of them, of course, getting ready to go home for the Easter break. But let's talk benefits. Matt in Birmingham has been hanging on the line for some time. Matt, we hear such conflicting stories. People who clearly are in desperate need for it, they don't get it. Others, it would appear, seem to just walk in and pick it up. What is there a way of solving this, do you think? Good morning.
So, for the people who, the woman you just interviewed, information to her. So to get these youngsters or people who are on it over just a year back into work, she says, it's harder after a year. Make it food vouchers, make it some sort of voucher scheme that's linked to you, not just any, just a general voucher, but it's got to be linked to you. So there's no money in your back pocket. Housing vouchers, electric vouchers, gas vouchers,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, so you make it undesirable for the general purpose because they want money in their back pocket. Constantly on booze and stuff like that.
The worthy recipients, such as Chris in Kingston, the gentleman who fell the length of an escalator, how do we make sure that he does...
To those who are blind, who've lost a limb, or, who are going to be sick for the rest of their life, who can't go to work, then you have to then give them some kind of financial aid into their bank. It's got to go into their bank because they're genuinely going to spend it on the things that they need, not alcohol, not going out, not going to Costa. And everyone deserves a coffee, but come on, Nick, country's in an absolute state. No. Also, Nick, when are the government going to give some support to the companies to actually get the people who want to go back to work, who can't work properly? When are the government going to pump some money into the companies to assist these people back into the work? The ones that want to, that are crying out, Nick.
Let me ask you this lastly. Obviously, we heard Paul in Belfast, we heard Chris in Kingston, but do you think there's quite a lot of...
If you know the right information, Nick, you can play the system. So the tax man, you can play the tax man like a fool. You can, if you know how to, you can play him. Can I say one last thing, Nick?
Go on, yeah.
In regards to the vaccinations, I've just gone and done my bloods. I've had my bloods done because I have to have them every few years.
Yeah.
Now, the woman, she's from America, lovely lady she is. I was speaking to her, and I just asked her opinion on the meningitis outbreak. I said, what do you think? And she positively says that she's against vaccinations.
Why?
I don't know. She said, she's from America. She says, in America, the rhetoric is that vaccines harm people. And I had to, bite my tongue and I had to walk out. I didn't. And see, even health professionals, even a pharmacist 2 years ago said it to me as well. And this is the worrying thing. You've got professionals have got the mindset that, the vaccines aren't no good.
Matt, thank you. That's a change, because when I lived in the United States, which was 30 years ago, my sons couldn't go to school unless they had their necessary jabs, and it was an absolute fact. Without my ex-wife providing the necessary certification, neither the kids could go, neither my sons could go to school. So how it's changed in the US. Thank you for that. Listen, very neatly, Matt, and I'm grateful you've led us back to this major conversation about meningitis. Coming to your calls, Barbara, in just a moment. But away you don't all, of course, join us at 7 o'clock in the morning. A couple of hours on, we need to remind you what happened in the House of Commons yesterday, where Streeting, the Health Secretary, addressed this and talked about using the JCVI, Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation.
Mr. Speaker, people are understandably asking about a vaccine.
From 2015, the MenB vaccine has been available on the NHS as part of routine childhood immunisations, but clearly most students would not be vaccinated. Given the severity of the situation, I can confirm to the House that we will begin a targeted vaccination programme for students living in halls of residence at the University of Kent in Canterbury, which will begin in the coming days. UKHSA will provide further advice on other cohorts in the coming days. On the question of wider eligibility, we obviously follow the expert independent advice of the JCVI. In light of this latest outbreak, I will be asking them to re-examine eligibility for meningitis vaccines.
Now, since the Health Secretary said that yesterday, the number of cases, as you've heard on LBC News Bulletin, since the outbreak in Kent has risen to 20. And in the first hour of the show, I spoke with one of the ministers, one of the Secretary's colleagues, Cabinet Minister Nick Thomas-Symonds, who told me...
Nick, I just heard that figure of 20 just before I came on air. And, of course, the government will be led by the clinical evidence. But just a few points. I think it's important for your listeners. Firstly, there is a targeted vaccination programme now for the halls of residence at the University of Kent, Canterbury. Second, anyone who was at the chemistry club on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March should come forward for preventative antibiotics. And on the gov.uk website, there's a number of places, I think four places in total, where you can actually go and get the antibiotics. I just want to say a word as well, Nick, about symptoms. And again, they're on the gov.uk website. Things like a rash, fever, headaches. It's often said that it's almost like having a hangover, the type of symptoms here. And it's so important that if you have those symptoms, you are going forward for medical advice and attention.
Unsurprisingly, you wanted to get involved this morning and telling me your story, starting with Paul in Manchester.
My daughter was at university in Bristol in 2022, had been out on a Saturday night, had phoned me the next day to say she felt poorly and she'd lost her phone. By the next day, she got really, really ill quite quickly. She went into university the next day and then came home feeling really poorly. She's just extremely fortunate. Again, her mother's an A&E consultant. She came down to Bristol extremely quickly and got her back into the hospital and said, I think my daughter's got meningitis, and managed to almost force her way to get antibiotics, because getting antibiotics at that point is the critical response. I think it's absolutely so important now that these kids get vaccinated.
Karen in Welwyn Garden City.
My baby was about 4.5 months old. She was really unsettled, crying a lot. Her temperature kind of kept spiking. For a couple of days, I just couldn't console her, so ended up taking her to A&E. We were admitted very quickly. They did a series of tests. They knew she was extremely unwell. Her CRP, which the infection marker, was over sort of 200 and creeping up and up. We were in hospital quite some time, about 10 days, while they sort of tried to figure out the cause of the bacterial infection, because they needed the right antibiotics in order to treat the right bacteria. She was getting more and more poorly. On about day 9, they did a routine MRI scan of her brain to check for any sort of signs of brain damage from the meningitis. They couldn't see anything. Everything was fine, but they did see something in the top of her neck. So they scheduled her in for another MRI of her spine, and they found out that her whole spinal cord was full of infection, infectious fluid. Because there was so much of it, had nowhere to go. It actually seeped into her lung cavity and collapsed her lung. We were blue-lighted up to Great Ormond Street. She was in surgery the next morning, and we were on the antibiotics. We were in hospital while she recovered. She was on the antibiotics for months, took her off it. She was well for 2 weeks, and then it happened all over again.
Well, Karen's daughter had 3 major operations before she was 12 months old. She is well now. She mentioned CRP. That's a sort of protein test. And to give it context, it was coming in at 200. Well, it should be, we're really sub 5, certainly below 10. Let's get to your stories now. Barbara's in Richmond. Barbara, what can you tell me? Your son, is that right? Well, now, where is he? Good morning.
Hi. My son is thankfully with me in Richmond. He came home 12 days ago.
He came home
but
12 days ago, did you say?
His roommate is in hospital with meningitis.
Yeah. Barbara, your line clipped. I just want to check. Your son came home 12 days ago.
Yeah, he came home 12 days ago. He's fine.
Where is he? From home from where?
Yes.
home from
the University
where?
Of Kent.
From, right, so, okay, I really want to speak to you, but I've got a horrible sense we've got a bad line. So let's just try slowly. So, that's gone. We really need to speak to that woman. While I speak, hello, Hannah in Harlow. Tell me your story. Good morning.
Hello. I had pneumococcal meningitis in November 2024. Mm-hmm. I was put into a medically induced coma, and I was in a coma for 8 days, and they wasn't sure whether I was going to make it or not at that point. Luckily, my fiancé, when I was sick at home, he could see the symptoms that I had, and got me to A&E when I needed to. They said if it was any later, I may not be here today.
Right.
After waking up from the coma, I was obviously in hospital for another 10 days after that, but I live with lifelong complications now, so I'm actually deaf in my left ear. I've completely lost my hearing. There was also complications with a lumbar puncture, so they have to do lumbar punctures to be able to diagnose meningitis.
Hannah, I want to come back to you. Please stay where you are, because I want to hear what those complications are, but I've got a line back into this, the other lady. Hannah, please stay where you are. Barbara's in Richmond. What we know so far is her son came home 12 days ago from the University of Kent. That's all we know. Barbara, can you hear me better now?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
So your son is well. He came home 12 days ago. What, just routinely? Or tell me what he's making of all what's going on down at the university campus.
He came home because he had a big break, and so he came home on the 6th.
Right.
But on the 8th, his roommate got very... He lives in a rented house, mm-hmm. and his roommate got really ill and is now two lumbar punctures in hospital, CT scans, with meningitis. And my son is fine. He's obviously super concerned about his roommate.
Yep.
But more, you know, parents are, there's a chat on Facebook for University of Kent parents, and all of us are trying to figure out how to get our kids the MB vaccine, and we're all getting the runaround.
Right.
I went to my GP, and they said, go to the hospital. The hospital doesn't answer the phone. Then
hold on a second. Yep. When you say, but my son is a University of Kent student, and one of his housemates is... currently
in hospital.
Do they not then immediately all the red lights start flashing and they do everything?
They do. Well, they did. And then they're like, oh, well, we don't have it. You have to go to hospital. And then you try to reach the hospital to ask them, do they have it before I bring him there? And then the GP said, well, you can go back to Kent and get it there. But they're only giving it to the kids in halls. They're not giving it to the kids who live off campus at this point.
Okay.
And
did
I don't want to go back into the hot zone.
No, that's nuts. Did your son attend this nightclub, Chemistry?
He has historically, but thankfully not in that week.
And what does he know about his chum? Is he okay, or is he one of these lads, one of these patients who's in an induced coma? Do we know?
He's not in a coma, thank God.
Okay.
But the kids, one of the dads on the chat was, it's heartbreaking. It's,
of course.
It's every parent's worst nightmare.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's just... grim.
But this is mate is looks like he's going to be good, right?
We hope so. It's still early doors.
So let's come back to your book. I find this incredible. I mean, yours, the government are saying absolutely, they're saying they're trying to trace students are going home from this university.
Yeah.
Your
yeah.
son is one of those.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think who we can ring to try and help you. What are your plans for him? I mean, you're not going to send him back to Kent after Easter until he's immunized, right?
No, and then one of your callers earlier this morning said you need 3 vaccines before it kicks in, which makes sense. But if I can't even get the first one, and then how long in between each one, what are we supposed to do?
Tell me a little bit more about this site where all the parents and the folk from university can. Is there a concern, a degree of frustration there as well, Barbara?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
What are they saying?
They're horrified for the parents that have these really sick kids, and they want to offer help in whatever way they can. They're concerned about what do we do. So many parents are going and getting their kids and bringing them home, and then everyone's asking where do we go? Okay. What do we do? Who do we call?
I think I've had an idea. So stay on the line. I don't want to say it out loud because it's unfair, but I think I've got an idea because I it would be great if we could help your boy. Can you stay on the line and speak with my colleague? We're literally formulating a plan, and I'm waving at her as we speak, but I think I've got an idea. Barbara, stay on the line. Hannah, I'm coming to you straight after the news. We want to hear about the complications we had with your lumbar puncture. Please stay where you are, and other callers too. 9:46 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis. Right.
Health officials say the number of meningitis cases in Kent has risen overnight from 15 to 20. The US military has used so-called bunker buster bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. And the Conservatives will seek to force a Commons vote on scrapping a planned fuel duty rise in September. LBC weather. Sunshine for most, with the odd shower for the northwest of Scotland. A mild day for England. A high of 18 degrees. LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The M25 clockwise is closed because of an accident where there's been a fuel spillage between junction 27 for the M11 and junction 28 for the A12, so there are severe delays. On the M25 clockwise, it's also heavy around junction 11 for Chertsey after an accident earlier. There are long delays on the A2 westbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident between the Inn on the Lake in Shoreham and tollgate services in Gravesend. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield. It's because of a problem with the overhead wires, so Greater Anglia also have delays of up to 20 minutes and cancellations between Liverpool Street and Shenfield. East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 20 minutes and cancellations between St Pancras and Luton. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
How worried should we be about the outbreak of meningitis and its continuing spread, and the Queen of the North? What do you think Ms Rayner is up to?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie! Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Wow!
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue. Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 8 years running. AJ Bell. Feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Straight back to Hannah in Marlow, who was talking about how she was diagnosed with meningitis and was just getting to the point that they had complications with the lumbar procedure when we managed to get a line into the mother of a student in Kent. Hannah, what were those complications? Thank you for hanging on the line.
So unfortunately, they hit a nerve within my back, which then left me wheelchair bound for 6 weeks after the discharge. But whilst I was in hospital, obviously I had to learn to talk and walk as well. So I've had lots of different ongoing therapies as such since having meningitis.
Oh my gosh.
And one thing I will say is when I was in A&E, when I was first taken there, we had to wait around, I don't remember this all luckily, and I'm thankful that I don't due to this brain infection, but we had to wait around 10 hours before I was moved from the A&E section through to ICU. I just think that maybe if it was a bit quicker, well, we'll never know that the antibiotics were started a bit earlier, then maybe I wouldn't have lost my hearing or the side effects would have been so bad.
And so how are you, so you're in a wheelchair, did you say you're deaf in one ear as well, is that right?
Yeah, my left ear I've completely lost all hearing, and then in my right ear I can hear about 80%, so I lost 20% of my hearing in my right ear.
You've got vision, have you?
I have got vision, luckily, yeah.
Are you able to work?
I am able to work. Luckily, my work's been really supportive with me through the whole process, and they've done the access to work and made my workplace very suitable for me so I can carry on with my job.
When you hear this on the news or you see it in the headlines, what goes through your mind of these youngsters who are possibly now receiving the treatment that you had?
I just think it's so scary for them. I can understand. You feel so lonely in that stage at that time. I was 25 when I first went into the hospital, so I was close to their age, but I don't think meningitis is taken as seriously for adults as it is for children. It's never at the forefront of people's minds.
I think you're right. In fact, I know you are. Hannah, thank you for hanging on the line. Have a good day. Thanks for sharing so much. I wish you well. Let's get at least a couple more callers in. Tracy's in Basildon. Tracy, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. It's a very sad situation at university.
Yes.
And I just wanted to, I've just tuned in and heard the conversation, and my daughter attends Kent University.
Does she? Right.
She does, yes. She came back home Monday, and thankfully she's well.
Right. Hang on a second. Did she go to the chemistry club on any of those 3 days?
No, she didn't.
Right.
She's been on campus. She lives there. She's not a resident in the halls, but she lives with a flatmate just outside.
Okay. Is she a second-year student?
She is a second-year student.
Okay. Right. Well, that's good news. The person she lives with, is she okay?
She's okay. Everyone seems to be fine. I think the only concern we've had was trying to get the antibiotic.
Yeah, and tell me how you're getting on, because we spoke to that mum, Barbara. She's not doing too well up in Richmond. How are you getting on?
It's very difficult. The doctors, as of yesterday morning, weren't aware from government guidance to issue the antibiotic, and we tried that route first of all.
Mm.
And unfortunately, they wouldn't help us. They wouldn't issue the antibiotic.
What are her friends down in Canterbury saying? Do they know anyone who's actually, unfortunately, now got meningitis and has been hospitalised?
They do know of friends that are hospitalised. Not direct contact,
right?
In that sense. It's very tragic about the person that's lost their life on campus.
Yes.
I just wanted to add, really, that with the antibiotic, without going back, I think, in the previous caller said, into the hot zone to try and get that, we had to take the route of 111 last night to try and get the antibiotic, and they actually prescribed this for her.
And has the has the pharmacist got it?
The pharmacy had the antibiotic.
Oh,
the prescription went through very, very well, but it was a bit of a hard 24 hours just to try and get that antibiotic. So I think that's sort of the concern for parents, and I fully appreciate. An antibiotic and the vaccine is really difficult to get.
Let me ask you this. When is your daughter due to go back to Kent?
It would be in 3.5 weeks' time.
And she's going to do it, or you're going to review it closer to the time?
Reviewing, but equally trying to get the vaccination, which we go private for. We certainly take that avenue because not being in the halls of residence, you won't be eligible for that vaccine.
I know. I mean, obviously you don't care about the cost, but it's the availability. Have you found somewhere where you can get it privately?
The conversation yesterday was that they had the first dose,
right,
but not the second dose.
What is the gap between them? How soon after the first do you have to take the second? Get the second.
I think it it's a couple of weeks. They wasn't quite clear because the second dose isn't available. It's obviously the demand. That was at one pharmacy yesterday, so I'm not sure how it's sort of playing out with other pharmacies with that demand. So it's very high at the moment. They said they've been inundated with calls.
I'll tell you what,
for this vaccine.
You and your daughter are ahead of where many other people are down in Kent, aren't they? You're way ahead of so many others.
Yes, indeed. You know, the antibiotic is one thing, but the vaccination, you know, is another as well to give you that complete peace of mind. So, you know, I wish everybody the very best in trying to get their kids covered.
Listen, let me know how you get on. You'll be reviewing that up until the very morning, I would imagine, your daughter, if she does go back to Kent after Easter. Well, I'm sure she will at some point. Give her my best wishes. Tracy, thank you. David's in Chorley. David, I'll be fairly brief because you tell us your story. I think you've had it. Is that right? How long ago was that?
It's quite a few years, Nick. Good morning. I'm 64 now, and I contracted it when I was 21.
Right.
I went down to less than 7 stone in weight. I was in hospital for 6 months.
Oh, my goodness.
I was on 45 different tablets a day and lumbar punctures twice a day.
45 tablets? My.
They didn't know. I mean, back then, Nick, 40 years ago, they weren't sure how to treat it, so it was literally just throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I want to give a bit of hope because I've survived. I've done okay.
Do you mind my asking, have you lost sight or hearing or disabilities of any?
I lost 20% of my hearing in my left ear.
Right.
Other than that, nothing, Nick. I was, as part of my recovery after being in hospital for 6 months and losing the ability to walk, I went to a gym, so I started to use weights. I met my wife through the gym for 39 years.
Brilliant.
I played rugby union for Bolton, and in 2012 I became the world champion natural bodybuilder in Miami.
Man alive, this is amazing.
So there is hope. It does not take people's ability to live long and prosper if it's treated well, Nick. So I just thought people need to know that. You
Let
know,
me ask you this. We're going back, 40 years or so?
43 years.
43. How many months before you felt back up to speed? Once you came out of hospital, once they, to use your expression, they'd thrown the kitchen sink at it, they saved your life. How many months before you thought, actually, I'm ready to play rugby or whatever it might have been?
Well, the rugby came much, much later, but in terms of being able to feel that I could go on a long walk, I could go and enjoy myself and go out and have a pint with the lads, it was 6 months. It was 6 months of slow progress to try and build muscle back, try and build confidence back, because confidence goes as well.
Of course it does. David, thank you. Look, apologies to Steve, Mark, John and others. We're done for another day, but taking important testimony, good luck to you. The show's over, but if you missed it, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions, and download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and we'll stay with that story, at least for the start of the programme today, because, well, I don't know what you prefer by way of a description. Is it town square? If you're a little younger, perhaps it's water cooler. But there are times when a radio station like LBC just becomes essentially a bit of a talking shop, offering information, reassurance, even some retrospection. The meningitis outbreak, or a meningitis outbreak, is now being treated as a national incident after an infected person was admitted to a London hospital. The number of cases is rising, and the Secretary of State for Health, Wes Streeting, is pretty clear that it is not panic stations, but it's still something you want to talk about.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a targeted vaccination programme is rolling out for students in Kent following an outbreak of meningitis. 5 new cases have been confirmed overnight, bringing the total to 20. 2 people have died in the outbreak, which was first reported on Saturday. Speaking to LBC this morning, Government Minister Nick Thomas-Simmons had this advice.
Anyone who was at the chemistry club on the 5th, 6th or 7th of March should come forward for preventative antibiotics. And on the gov.uk website, there's a number of places, I think 4 places in total, where you can actually go and get the antibiotics.
The United States has used so-called bunker buster bombs to hit Iranian missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Tehran's blockade of the key shipping route has caused oil prices to soar over the past few weeks. The Conservatives will seek to force a Commons vote on scrapping a planned fuel duty rise in September. It's as petrol prices continue to rise as a result of the Iran conflict. Labour says it's been kept under review, but it's too early to predict how prices at the pumps will change in the coming months. Shadow Transport Secretary Richard Holden's told LBC that's not good enough.
We're saying, have a look across the board. There are other places you could find the money from, particularly, we think, concentrating on welfare. We don't think you should be raising taxes on the family car, on the person who needs their van to go to work, or on literally everybody's shop, because actually food has to be delivered to shops right across the country.
Angela Rayner has warned that Labour risks a breach of trust with voters over plans to make it harder for migrants to stay in the UK. The former Deputy Prime Minister has described proposals as un-British. Legal migrants could have to wait up to 20 years before they can settle permanently under the plans. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has previously said the change is needed to avoid a drain on public finances. And Scotland's busiest railway station, Glasgow Central, has partially reopened. It's been closed for 10 days after a large fire destroyed an adjoining building. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 26 points at 10,429. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine for most, the odd shower for the northwest of Scotland, a mild day for England, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm here with Charlie Bigham. What's cooking, Charlie?
My classic fish pie. Made with succulent salmon and delicately smoked haddock, smothered with bechamel and parsley sauce, and all topped off with the richest, butteriest mash and a golden mature cheddar topping.
You had me at succulent.
An unbeatable classic. Cheers.
Delicious. Tastes like home.
You know you don't actually live here, right?
Oh. Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning to you. We've got quite a grown-up show today. I should probably warn you in advance, but I'm sure we'll find room for some fun and frolics and possibly a couple of ferrets as well before the day is out. It's never entirely obvious what question one should ask at times like this. I'm referring immediately and mainly to the meningitis outbreak, the fatal meningitis outbreak that has now been declared a national incident, although as one of two of you have already pointed out, that just means it's reached London. I don't think that's entirely fair. It becomes national when it spreads beyond the area in which it began. We know that two people have died, and we know that an event in a nightclub in Canterbury in Kent has been deemed a super spreader event. Health officials braced for the death toll to keep rising, and the number of cases will probably go up in the course of this programme. I would like to know, and I hope this is an appropriate question and not a silly one, and also not a rhetorical one. I hope it's not a question to which everybody except me knows the answer. But as a public health professional, what is your training with regard to meningitis? What are you taught? As we see things unfolding, I've been across the southeast, most obviously in Kent. You just heard the cabinet minister doing the studio rounds this morning, talking about the nightclub where if you were there, then you should be seeking antibiotics. I've seen photographs of queues down in Kent at the University of students in masks, trying to get, or not trying to get, queuing up successfully for their treatment. And in a way, the other element of the conversation that I'm keen to have today is about the reaction you have to the word. It's very generation based, isn't it? I think this came across during what I heard of Nick's show. You have a very generational based response to this, and I mean, some people of quite a young age will have had experiences and knowledge of this condition that are chilling. I can say that this is a quote from Professor Susan Hopkins, who is head of the UK Health Security Agency. I can say that in my 35 years working in medicine, in healthcare and hospitals, this is the most cases I've seen in a single weekend with this type of infection. And she goes on, I think in quite worrying words, to say it's the explosive nature that is unprecedented here. The number of cases in such a short space of time. NHS were initially managing it as a major incident in the region, but they now have increased that overlay to having a national level oversight as well. The Deputy Chief Medical Officer added, "This is by far the quickest growing outbreak I've ever seen in my career. It is obviously of national significance." And it was the French authorities who helped us raise the alarm about the outbreak, because the second person to become severely ill had travelled to Kemp from France and was admitted to hospital on their return. So what I want to do is, I kind of get, with your help, a picture of the now, the little picture, as it were, the specifics of what is currently happening now in Kent and now beyond, but also the bigger picture. What are we trained to do in the context of this particular condition, this particular disease? Can we say anything substantive or interesting about the scale of the spread, and the fact that the senior medical officers in the country are clearly quite taken aback by what has happened? We know, of course, that Wes Streeting has described the spread of the disease as unprecedented. We know that a university student and a sixth form pupil have passed away, and we therefore know that parents across Kent and now beyond will be in a state of panic, even if perhaps some of their more chill children are not. Four schools across Kent have seen cases reported, and at least 11 cases have been linked to that club in Canterbury called Club Chemistry, with the government urging today that if you attended an event there on March the 6th or subsequently, then you should definitely seek medical advice. So I'm going to open up the phone lines, 0345 6060973. If you think you know something interesting or useful, I'd just like you to ring in and share it, really. It's not one of those days where I have a laser-like and very specific inquiry. If you have a child at university in Kent, just give me a ring and talk me through what you're doing, how you're feeling. What are they being told? If you are, how dare I presume that my listeners are of a certain age, you are a student in Kent and you tune in daily to the James O'Brien Experience. What's going on? What are you being told? What are you hearing? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. And if you are a public health professional, because I think about this a lot, I think it's probably because of one of the very first pieces of professional advice that my late father gave me when I was sitting in the newsroom at the Sunday Telegraph doing absolutely nothing. I was just there on work experience, and I wasn't getting much experience or any work. But I phoned my dad to sort of have a bit of a moan, and Dad said, somewhat, I think, indulgently, Dad just said, "You're there in case they need you," which wasn't entirely true, because there were no circumstances really in which they would have needed me.